Hey, Dave.
Hi, Dave.
Hey there. Hello, Dave.
You pray and
hey,
I show
Dave.
Up.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yes, we did.
Amazing.
Well, the amazing thing was he came to the wall.
Yeah.
Probably walking.
Doors are closed and he was here.
So I guess we'll start where we usually start after devotion is like people of things.
I talked to Mary Jo today and Bob, they were going to transfer him to a skilled nursing facility, but now they're going to send him home with some IV on IVs for a while. And they took the catheter out, which is good. And so they're going to try it at home. So he'll probably be at the rehab place another couple of days, but then she'll go home. And she said he's looking a lot better.
That's good.
And so I just need to continue to pray for him.
Did they talk, Don, about a hospice or anything like that, or is he just... It just keeps like a little half steps down.
Yeah, no.
Yeah.
She has not mentioned that word
at all.
Yeah. So, and you know, just based on last couple times I've seen him, I wouldn't think he's at that point yet.
Yeah.
But, I mean, he's definitely not doing good. But
right. Because I mean, going home is great, but it also you can go home.
Yeah.
Under the realization that you can't do really anything else.
Right. And we've been there before. I mean, yeah. he's just within the last several months, been two or three times that he's gone and come back.
Right.
But Mary Jo's seemed in good spirits.
She's good. She's good. Don and I went over to the West today. Got to visit with Lewis. Moved a bed out so he get a hospital bed in. And you know, he's gone down since I saw him last about a couple months ago. And we were walking out after we did what we needed to do, and Mary followed us. And she got to the door and came outside and said, "Hey, when you're praying, pray an extra prayer for my mom." She said she's not doing well. She's just been rough on her.
Yeah.
So, Lewis and Joyce.
And my understanding is he is on hospice.
Yes.
Right? And I don't know if that was public. I think it's public knowledge, but I don't know that we've ever said anything like that in here or whatever. So that was.
Do we need to announce that?
Arstine let me know.
Okay.
She's the one that told me, but I don't really. But since it didn't come from Joyce, I didn't know if it was public or not.
Yeah, I'm gonna go see them this evening. I'll find out.
Okay.
Yeah.
Hopefully, they got the hospital bed in and up.
Yeah.
If I'm with any healthcare related things, things don't usually happen.
I think hospice is usually pretty good.
Yeah, hospice. That's different.
Yeah. Yeah.
So. And Connie, talked to her yesterday. She's still in pain. Been rough on her, and our small group has really come through with that. So she has food through the end of through Sunday, and then several of the small group have donated money and going to go over to the Art of Entertaining on Monday to get a bunch of food to take over to her. And then Barb is putting together a meal train also. So.
Okay.
All those
had a broken foot. What was it?
Yeah, she was fell on the stairs, broke her foot, and then she also skinned up her arm, just pulled a bunch of skin off, and it's not. She said it's not going to grow back, so I guess they're going to have to do some grafting or something.
Okay.
She said it was pretty painful. So.
Sue talked to Janice Devania the other day. Janice has been taking driving lessons, trying to learn how to drive again.
Wow.
Turns out she's got some issues with her eyes that she's seeing parallax things that, you know, like a car's and a half is there.
Mm.
So she's got to do some tests and stuff, and According to Janice, Glenn's doing better. That's sounded, you know, good. Sue's going to drive them to their next hospital appointment and, you know, try to see what we can do. But, yeah, so that's the latest though, I heard on that. They're just kind of stuck and housebound and, you know.
I mentioned this to the guys yesterday morning, and I called Debbie Schwartz to, because I didn't really understand her text completely, but she had a chest x-ray, then a CAT scan, and then a PET scan, so something was going on, or at least she really felt like it was, and then she had a lung biopsy, and it was extremely painful. And during that, she said, but she said, I didn't say any naughty words. I love her sense of humor in there. Yeah. And then she said, I had a small pneumothorax, like collapsed lung, basically, that happened during the biopsy. But then that resolved itself. So when I read this the first time, I thought she meant her situation was resolved. But that's not the case. She's waiting on all of the results of these scans to figure out what's going on, and you know, wanted me to share that with you guys tonight. Wasn't quite ready to let the church in because she didn't know that much, but I think certainly anxious about it.
Isn't her husband a physician of some sort?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yes, he's a retired physician.
Retired physician.
Okay. Yeah.
And then she said Collins and Trish have been helpful both medically and spiritually. So again, I thought that was it. And she comes to your group, right?
Right.
She's in your group. So again, the group seemed to be caring for each other, and she's, you know, wanting us to know about this. And I'll try to follow up with her here in a few days. And she's, I asked her to let me know as soon as she finds something out.
Yep, I give her a call too.
Another kind of interesting development is went and spent some time with Don and Pam Edson, who live over here. And Pam's been around forever at McKnight. I mean, it seems like it now since her grandson was in sewing school. That's how she first got hooked up with this. And then Don, not so much, because he worked on Sunday. And that's only been the last year or so since he retired. But in any event, had a real good discussion with them, and she's thinking about baptism, so that's really interesting at her age and stage in life, and we just want us to pray for her and pray that you know, she said, I just want it to be my decision and not feel like I'm being pushed into this, or, you know, doing it because somebody else thinks I should do it or the church thinks I should do it, but I feel convicted by God to do it. And so I think she's very close, and we're going to get together again this week to talk about it. And then she said, could we just go ahead and get two for the price of one? and have Don be baptized too. And so he didn't say anything. He didn't resist it. I couldn't read him one way or another, this was, I think, all a little bit new to him, frankly, in terms of processing this. But I just wanted us to be praying about that for God to move in that situation. And it seemed a very positive one.
Mm-hmm. When Pam attended the Next Step class that Steve and Gwen led, she alluded to that a little bit, that was, you know, she didn't dwell on it, but she did allude to the fact that that's something that she's not really ever wrapped her mind around very well.
Yeah.
And I don't know if there's been much follow-up since that class, but they've been here a little bit, and I appreciate you following up. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of gnawing at her is what that tells me. And that's a good thing.
Yes. She opened up apparently in one of the small groups up here on the Sunday morning class, either last Sunday or a week before, about the same thing, because I can't remember who it was. It was Betty or somebody told me we got off track a little. And they were talking about, you know, that, and somebody in the group said, well, I was 60 when I was, you know, just to help her see, because she's witnessed this with the teenagers, but we haven't had a lot of adult conversions in a while.
Yeah.
So I think that's promising. That's good.
Great.
And then while I'm on the roll there, that Mark and Lindsay were also up here in that class that first week. And Mark and Lindsay, right after class, said, you know, we just don't know kind of where we stand or what we're thinking or how we should think about baptism. And so we need to get into that next steps class. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that was, I mean, they kind of said that right after the class that day, because they have a variety of backgrounds. I think one of them was Catholic, and then they attended together at Central Pres for a few years, and then they changed ministers, and the whole church kind of got up in a roar and had all kinds of issues right before COVID, and then they've just never been back anywhere. Mm-hmm. And so then they came back essentially to church because Jacob said, I'd like to go to church.
Yeah.
And so now they have really liked it here. I mean, I just feel like they're been drawn in each time every time the doors are open.
Yeah.
And so now they're just in that stage of, okay, where do I believe and how does that belief system fit in with this congregation?
Mm-hmm. She's been reading the Bible every day.
She'll put the comments in. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That Bible thing has been really good. Mm-hmm. A lot of people, and if you're not in it, I'd encourage you to just step in. It's so good just reading the comments people make. And Jason Vincent, he summarizes it every time.
We should be publishing it.
I know, really. I thought about copying and pasting it so I can have it to remember all the stuff that happens in the Bible. It's like, really, been really good.
Did things go well Wednesday with Allie?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That was a good.
Yeah, it was really great. Good. Yeah.
We couldn't make it, wanted to very much, and glad that happened.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Can you share a little bit about her journey?
Sure. Mostly we were talking to Max. Actually, Jaden brought it up last summer, and I guess a couple months before the summer, and I went and got this old pamphlet that was like how to introduce people to Christianity kind of pamphlets, and started studying with them once a week with all the older kids. And we paused that when Jaden had to go away for the summer. Mm-hmm. And then when they got back, they wanted to get baptized right away. Mm-hmm. And Allie had mentioned that she was thinking about it, but she really didn't want to do it at the same time as them. And, you know, and we told her, you know, it's fine, whenever she feels ready. Mm-hmm. And then I assume something that happened, either a little inspiration from, they went to that thing.
Youth in Action.
Or maybe it's just, is he doing it? And he got on her mind. But she came Sunday to me and said, Dad, what is it? She's all serious. I want to get baptized. All right, that's great.
Yeah.
Oh,
that's great.
But I didn't feel like I needed to ask her about it, because she's went through the study, so they know and down, left and right. Gotcha. Max's problem was that he knew too many things about baptism. He was like, it's confusing. There's so many different things about it. I want to make sure I do it just right. And when he finally decided to do it, it was when he said, you know what? I just want to make sure I do it. It doesn't really matter.
That's good. I've enjoyed your kids.
Exciting time.
And you're doing a great job as a dad, you and your wife both, as far as training them.
Youth group is fundamental to make them feel motivated.
Yeah.
Amen.
For sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm jealous of them. I wish I had that many Christian friends when I was growing up. Yeah.
Yeah.
Very, very good.
Yeah.
Enjoyed having the kids over Sunday night.
Oh, yeah.
And,
good.
I was going to share a kudo with your daughter. Yeah. Joyce's daughter is Rosalyn?
Yeah.
Rosalyn. Yeah. I've got to get the names right. But,
yeah.
Joyce was telling us how she was just inspired by the fact that your daughter kind of took her aside under her wing, and you know,
yeah,
and she said she never had that chance of it, like you're saying, when she was growing up. And I thought, yeah, that's really good when they're actually doing it.
Mentor.
Yeah.
Sophie's amazing.
Sophie is absolutely amazing. I just watching her like down at camp back 6 months ago with the little kids, really, she's just amazing. So you've done a great job.
I wanted to mention one other couple. I don't think we mentioned them last time. Did we mention Steve and Lisa? Maybe we did last meeting. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Don't want to rehash that, but they should be back this this Sunday is kind of the plan. And so they've sat up the last few weeks or prior to going out of town by Don and Debbie and us. And so just an interesting.
Week before last, Ryan Cornelius was here.
Right.
And I kind of pumped him a little bit for what was going on. And I think what he came here because it was there's ice and snow and so on, and his wife and kids didn't want to get out in it.
Uh-huh.
And I said, well, you know, glad to have you again.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, right.
But she's from a Catholic background, and I think she's pretty much decided.
She's pushed it. Yeah.
Oh, actually. Yeah, okay.
They're, I think, going to end up there.
Yeah.
I think he did write a nice email back to Brett and I, though, because I talked to, I kind of, the two of them had, he tried to connect with Brett during the ministry fair about the safety team.
Oh.
And so we just kind of remade that connection this past Sunday. And I didn't feel like he discounted coming back.
Right.
But I do get what you're saying, because I think she did definitely kind of say that she's taking the kids to Catholic
confirmation
class and all
and
that.
She's brought her parents, and they loved it when they were here.
Yeah,
right. So, Sunday. They just really enjoyed it.
I think their parish closed in
North County.
Open to looking at some other things. They were real disappointed that they closed the parish. So they opened their mind up to some other options, and they looked at us.
But you got the sense that it was kind of the end of the road with us, or did you, it was just hard to say?
I think if he could,
if it was just him.
He would be here, because he's got more of a Baptist background.
Right, right.
And,
no.
So he was trying to keep the family
together.
So.
Yeah, he's probably not even something he could talk about really too much, or doesn't want to talk about too much.
And then another visitor, Carol, who's friends with Lisa, neighbors with Lisa and Steve, she going back to Phoenix this week, and so she wrote us, Susan and I, a really sweet note.
She wrote one to Becky and I, just tremendously talented. She's a sculptor.
Yeah.
Mm.
And she's got her main place that she works out of is out in north of Scottsdale.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So they're going to, she'll be gone for a few months, so, but when she comes back, we'll...
Yeah, she evidently loves it here.
Yeah.
And then I don't know if I told you guys, there was a LaDonna McDonald. She was sitting kind of up by them, and she knew the Mintons from Central Prez. But I think her and her husband both went to Harding. And her husband's mother is in Sunrise. And that story's crazy. But she was there, and I just went up to meet her. And she said, you look familiar. I'm like, you do too. And she said, do you have family in Sunrise? I'm like, yeah. And then we knew who we were. And so she said, we were talking, and I said, yeah, we're not like the Church of Christ that you used to know. She said, oh, no. She said, I took notes to take home my husband.
First time I visited. We're taking all those notes. Yeah. So we got to study this and this. And what about that?
And it wasn't negative for them, which they, when they first came here, they were with a very ultra-conservative church. But then they were at Central Prez, so evidently they're not real ultra-conservative. And I'm surprised she didn't come back. And she said, just to let you know, everything is really positive here. When she came in, she said, I felt the positivity and just really good. So that was good to hear. So I got another friend of mine, one of my dear friends, teaches at Harding. And he went to the hospital today, having a bunch of pain. And they said he's got a bowel obstruction. Mm. And so they're going to try to get it with a tube before they have to cut him open or whatever. So just, I told him we'd be praying for him here. And he sent me a thing and said, yeah, that's, his mom went in for the same thing and she died 2 weeks later. So I'm sure that's on his mind.
Oh, geez.
So, and this is his last semester. He's retiring after this year.
What's his name?
J.D. Yingling.
What is it? I'm sorry.
J.D. Yingling, Y-I-N-G-L-I-N-G.
So Jeff, Becky, what's
surgery? Oh, Becky, surgery date is February 7th.
Okay.
So that's moving that along. I mean, that's moving along. Seems fast now because we thought it was going to be 6 to 8 weeks from her last visit, and then there an opening popped up. Somebody canceled, and so this is now it feels right around the corner. So she's got a couple things she's got to do to prepare, and then and then she'll be laid up for a while, and so I'll probably at least take a week off.
Okay.
And just be home, or you know, maybe somebody can work there, but it's going to definitely affect our February. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
Along with the rest of us, we're all doing something in February, it sounds like. So.
I remember telling me that her doctor said for the first 2 weeks, you will be very mad at me.
Yeah, you're going to hate me.
Pretty angry.
The first time.
But then you'll be fine.
Yeah.
So what is she having? Knee or hip?
Back.
Back.
Oh. Back surgery. Yeah.
Okay.
Just got to make sure you're ready for golf season. I
mean, yeah, I know. Yeah. I know. She won't be, but hopefully I'll be back. I'll be ready.
Anything else? Let's pray then. Father, we want to come before you this evening and ask in your name for a lot of things here. We lift up Bob and Mary Jo and ask you to bless them at this season of their life. And we pray we may strengthen them. And we know, Father, that life is moving ahead always, but we just pray for them. We pray for Lewis and hearing about his change to the status that he's in now. And we just pray for Joyce as well, that you would lift them up. Lift up Connie Smith and ask for healing with the leg and everything that she's sustained. We pray for Debbie Schwartz and her lung report to come back. We pray it'll be positive. Thank you for Pam and Don Epson's interest in learning more about your kingdom. We pray that they might be pulled together to glorify you in whatever way that is. We lift up Mark and Lindsay and their family and their search for what to do. Think of Ryan Cornelius and his family and pray a blessing upon them. And for Steve's friend, J.D. Nyland, and his surgery. And for Becky's surgery on February the 7th. Mm-hmm. Father, there's, I know, many more people we need to be lifting up, but you know better than we. And we simply want to be your servants in all that we do. We ask in the name of Jesus.
Amen.
So I thought we'll maybe go into the debriefing next. And this is more of an art than a science here. So I need you guys to help with this if you don't mind. So Saturday was phenomenal on so many levels, right? The part we got in terms of the sessions, you know, Shelby and Mason and the group, they were great. Really appreciate them coming and sharing information with us, challenging us to rethink some things. And the fellowship within the group was good in terms of the table setting that we were sitting with Twin Cities, guys from Twin Cities. It was real good to get to know them a little bit. And but the walk away sometime is, you know, what do we do with the information that we heard? What direction we think the Spirit is trying to lead us in terms of where are we going in our ministry, in terms of our shepherding, our own personal spiritual journey, and then those people that we God has put in front of us to mentor and lead, and sometimes even ourselves. How do we find mentors for ourselves sometimes so that we can continue to grow? That sometimes is challenging. Is finding those, because the expectation is that we got most of this figured out. So, we're vulnerable too. You know, we need opportunities for growth. And So I thought what we can maybe do is take a few minutes and debrief. And there's just some guidelines that we can work by. And so there's maybe four questions that maybe we can kind of address. The objective is to determine if there's a piece of information or a concept we heard on Saturday that could be valuable for us to take under consideration as a shepherding group or as a spiritual leader. You know, something that we might just, in our own personal journey, that might be helpful to us. And about the first thing that we can talk about is what are some of the things that we're currently doing and doing effectively that we heard on Saturday? What did you feel like, okay, I think we seem to be on the right track with that. So this, what did you hear Saturday that might lead you to believe that?
I heard a lot of appreciation from people that were there, just thanking us for, you know, hosting it and so on. And it was an interesting group. I mean, I thought I was encouraged by it. But I think in some ways, you go back to the Bible again and say, okay, what did the church do when they first started? Well, they put everything in the pot and said, we're all going to be together, you know. Mm-hmm. And I've often thought, it sounds like communism, but, you know.
On a small scale, it can work.
But the concept of taking care of people and, you know, love and embracing folks and taking care of needs and feeding them, and, I mean, it's the basics. Mm-hmm. And in some way, there's nothing new under the sun. I think God has, you know, blessed this congregation for a long time. And I have every confidence that he'll send the people that we need. And but it was just, you know, kind of interesting. I almost felt like a lot of folks were just really surprised by that. And I think what we've accomplished here, seeing, you know, what we were doing, and
The facility, the staff, and the workshop itself.
So I thought it was a real positive.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah, I think we can always learn and continue to learn and improve. But the things that I felt pretty affirmed in was their emphasis about the next gen and just how that's really been right down the alley. I mean, that's something that really affirmed me as far as feeling very good about what we're trying to do there and realizing it was kind of a new road for us too, a new path for us. Mm-hmm. So lots to learn on that yet, but I think that was good. You know, things like pastoral committee, I think, you know, what a home run that, that's been so far, you know. And
I was thinking similar, you know, one is, you know, the emphasis on prayer and abiding is, you know, with Woe being here and then Dave taking it over. So every Sunday morning, I've not been able to make those, but that's all we set that aside to do is pray. And then we make sure that prayer is part of what everything that we do. And I think, again, I really think we're doing well on that. And again, I think when we meet, you know, I'm have responsibility for the building, but I'm so thankful that we don't spend agenda time talking about the flowers in the circle drive. You know, we're talking about people's the first one and, you know, what's going on in like the pastoral group and you know, what's going on in people's lives. And so I think we're doing really well on that as far as where our priorities are.
You can fix the baptistry.
I'm trying.
Yeah. I've liked us looking and seeing where God's working and joining him, and that's part of the being spirit-led.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And an example is just the Marseille stuff. I was thrilled that Sunday morning when we pretty quickly made the decision that we're going to give $100,000. And I think we decided plus whatever people wanted to give. That just really thrilled my heart. I'm just what they're doing over there is just pretty amazing stuff, and to be, I'm proud to be a part of that in a little way that we are.
And if that, if you guys didn't know about that, that'll be announced this Sunday as part of the budget planning on that. So
Yeah. I think Steve wanted that to be on the agenda tonight. Maybe we'll include some time with that too, Steve. I forgot to put that on there.
I think too, our efforts just in our elder groups, you know, they sort of mentioned that, you know, that it was interesting how he split out the three different words that are used for shepherding and overseer and pastor and how we've tried to address that, you know. And I think, again, that's a strong thing that we can develop and I think get better at. But I really think that's the kind of a strong plus, you know.
I thought it was powerful that all these church leaders heard that it was okay to wait. Getting busier isn't the answer, and I felt they empowered that room to hear that. And it needed to be heard, and that back to basics that we're doing is, that's a big part of it, is not just every gap we can fill, you know, isn't the way to do it. And that waiting, listening, praying, just thought that was a very worthy reminder. Because when you don't know what to do, and a lot of this, we don't know what to do, at a time of pruning and just characterizing things that way, and that is okay. I thought that was very good, and we can remind each other of that as we... a year from now when we're on the treadmill again, you know, we're the new guys on the treadmill or whatever.
I think that was a similar takeaway for me. I don't know where it fits in this, but, you know, where he said pre-COVID, you know, if a youth minister had an hour free, you know, the thought was you're not doing right. And we just, and I think what he said is we're grinding them into dust. And then COVID happened, and then we find out we could jettison a lot of this stuff. You know, why were we doing it? And then, you know, post-COVID, it's like, well, why are we doing what we're doing? To your point is, you know, being busy isn't always the right answer. And again, you know, we just have to watch that we don't get back on that treadmill again and grind the ministers into dust.
And I would say even conversely, having two young guys as ministers that are single, the temptation is for them to do that same, that I understand that because I did that for 20s and my 30s and my 40s and, and yet, and so I find myself resisting and even in conversations with our family and, you know, again, that's ball games this and somebody's sick here and whatever, whatever, but that kind of tension between all of the activity that has gotten kind of fired up and what is actually doing something because we want to put something else on the schedule and what is actually needed to help make disciples. And those are hard distinctions. And I'm not saying we get together too much. I know that's not my point, but we have to be careful that it doesn't just get too busy that way, coming from them.
And I don't know anybody that is as bad as that as I am. It's my nature.
I don't need Steve.
And my wife, if she was here, she would be staring at me.
Are you listening?
I'm still that way. I retire, and I'm just, it's crazy. I really want to do better with all of that.
Yeah.
It, just in terms of another thing, it wasn't actually Saturday, but it was Sunday. Just the fact that we could have a place where Shelby could preach with Carson. And I mean, I just felt really proud of our church. I don't know, Sunday. I don't know somebody said, I think Travis said, well, there are a lot more people up here in the front right corner and the singing's really good. And I don't know if it wasn't just that, but it was just like,
it was my voice up there.
The song selection was really done. And the worship team came together and it just, but the whole, in a sense, I know we're worshiping God, but I was looking at it through the eyes of Carson and Shelby. I couldn't help it to a bit. And I was like, this is a great place to be. This is a great place to be right now. And then the fact that Mary Ellen could do the introduction, as scared as I was, I didn't know where that was going to go. But the fact that, you know, we could do that here and feel good about that as a part of the values, family. Okay. And we had the diversity, and we had the family, and we had the spirit-led, and I mean, just a lot of those values being next-gen, being evidenced in that one assembly.
Yeah. And she got up and did it. She was pretty hesitant for probably several reasons.
Yeah. That's good.
Okay. The one negative I'll throw out there about that is they need to have tech with that on their sermon.
Because they need to what?
They should have had tech with their sermon.
PowerPoints.
Some kind of video or something. Because I've talked to three or four people that had no idea what was going on.
Yeah.
They heard them talk. Yeah. They remember
we've kind of
absolutely
been trained
nothing.
Over the last couple decades so. That we
yeah. see the, you have to have the visual.
Yeah. Yeah. Going back and forth, it was hard
to keep. Yeah. And I definitely heard that. People were going to connect in a well.
We have a videotape, so I mean.
With the dialogue kind of thing. But. The very fact that it could do it, that I do.
Yeah, the dialogue wasn't the problem, I think. I think it was that
the non-visual.
It was so much higher than a lot of people's normal thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And so because there were no PowerPoints, it kept them from being able to see it, people just were struggling.
Interesting.
And for them, it took them a lot of work, a lot of preparation to go back and forth.
To get this thing.
It was a script. So, I mean, they wrote it together back and forth.
Yeah, I did hear that.
Yeah. So question number two, again, based on information from Saturday, what is something we are currently doing that we can probably make some improvements? What do you guys think as you look at?
So we're on, okay.
Yeah.
Encouraging leadership, trying to bring more into this and in more, even on another level.
Diversify the leadership?
Yeah.
Okay.
So that we can do more unique things for elders.
Yeah.
And I've always thought we were doing a lot of deacon stuff.
Okay.
But I think we have men around here that have servant hearts.
Yeah.
So then it's, but I think if we can get other people involved,
I heard two contradictory things. First was one of the speakers said in 100 churches, we haven't seen a deacon model that works. Okay, I can't remember the word collapse or some word that he used was pretty strong, like this isn't really working. And on the other hand, there is the idea that elders should only be doing things that are uniquely eldering, which I think in order for that to happen, you have to have some other way of these other things working, but that's not working. So all that to say is maybe we're right in the middle of that squeeze, but that is something to work on.
Yeah. How many deacons do we have at the church?
We don't actually. Well,
we don't call them.
Them
well, like we have people like Brian, who put over the tech.
Yeah.
We have ministry leaders.
Jeff over the missions. Joyce over the greeters.
Okay.
So they're all ministry leaders. Mm-hmm. Is the term we've used for quite a few years, and truthfully, that was kind of an easy way to bypass having to talk about male leadership exclusively, and so. Probably, I'm going to say 15 or so different ministries have where they're in their area, whether that's small groups and Dale Simpson or we could kind of go on and on in those. Collins with the pastoral team, so Barb with the
they
food
said
pantry.
They haven't seen anywhere that's doing it well.
Well, that's kind of what he implied.
He didn't use it towards the ministry leaders, though.
He didn't say it that way, no.
And being that we have no deacons, we would fall into that.
In the search for the right structure for deacons, to have deacons, I don't think there's a model that is consistently working well.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it used to be.
Yeah.
There was where deacons was kind of a stepping stone to become an elder.
Yeah.
I think he was saying that one doesn't work in churches today for any number of reasons. But
Then Monday night, a couple months ago, we had a lot of the ministry leaders up here.
Yes.
That was awesome.
Yeah, it was fantastic.
That was awesome.
Yeah. Fantastic. And
the other problem I had with what you were thinking is, so Brad, he sings. Now, I think he sings probably because he likes to sing. And you help with the youth group. So because you're an elder, why would you not want to do that? And a lot of what I do, I don't mind.
You don't
doing
mind
some
shoveling
this,
the snow.
I don't mind a lot of that stuff. And so
we don't mind
I think it took us away from doing the good things
that's
to be
right.
busy, but I think
that's
again, it doesn't make sense for Brad not to sing or for you not to serve with the youth group,
and
so
right. That's right.
And some of those things, I understand the spirit of it, but I think maybe some of the implementation. Another thing I think we could do better, kind of in line with the diversity, is so we, if you read how we are, we call ourselves, it's shepherding couples. And I like that. But we never really get our wives involved. And I was thinking, well, maybe like once a month they should sit in, or when we have a big decision, like when we choose a minister or something, it's like there should be a time when our wives are here where we are actually shepherding couples. Hey, hon, help me. Here's what we're talking about. Yeah. And again, I think there's times when, you know, that's not going to work. But I do think if there was a way, and I just had been thinking about that the past couple of days, maybe once a quarter or once a month, you know, just have our wives here, or at least invite them.
And that's so smart.
Me too.
And, you know, especially when there's big decisions, here's what we're thinking about, ladies. You know, what do we do? And again, I think it goes with the diversity. It goes with, you know, just, you know, again, we're shepherding couples. That's what we call ourselves. And I think there would be a lot of benefit in that.
Really. That will be so helpful at half an hour when I get home and rehash what happened. You get it done
in a half hour. That's pretty
good.
No, I like that.
Reads it off as he's typing.
I like that. My wife wouldn't come probably if it's during the week, because she doesn't do anything during the week when she has to work, and her stress levels way past the threshold where it should be having to take care of her mom and aunt. She's just we're in that season, and she's not able to.
Conceptually, though, you'd like the idea.
Oh no, I love the idea, but I don't think I could get her to come.
Yeah.
I can share a story with you that might give you the other side of the perspective. Back in the day when Brian Magnuson was the minister here, we invited all of our spouses to come and sit in on the meetings. And this was right at the time where Brian ended up walking out, and you know, and then Brian walked down to the deacons' meeting and told them he'd been fired by the elders after he told us he was took a job, you know. So I remember Deanie Runcie saying, "I never want to get involved in this kind of stuff." And she said, "Don't you ever try to."
Don't you ever.
And my wife was right there behind me.
Yeah.
So.
We need to selectively pick the topic. Yeah.
Make sure the preacher's not there.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Just saying, there's
another
whole angle of that.
But there are blind spots we have, and that
yes, absolutely.
And I'm not saying have them here every meeting, but I think it would be good. Directionally, here's kind of what we've been talking about.
Well, and just like with Camp Neotes and CFS, once females got on those boards, they were much better, especially Camp Neotes. Well, no, both of them, because they're dealing with children, and they obviously have a little more insight.
So, Jeff, back to your thing that you had mentioned about the deacon thing, and the it made me think of Acts four or five.
Six.
In that whole picture there, where the elders are not able to handle it, so they get the deacons to come in. But then you have the deacon model failing because they don't serve everybody.
Right.
And so it's that whole, almost the same
thing
that's happening there is what they're seeing that's happening in the modern world too. Mm-hmm. But the thing is that the elders a lot of times try to take it, like the apostles were doing, trying to take all the roles and trying to fill everything. Yeah. And that's where it's sort of, we have to be willing to step back if we can't get what we need to be done. On the other surface, other level.
Yeah. And then we read from Exodus 18 yesterday, day before, where Moses was doing so much, and his father-in-law came in and said, "What are you doing? You need to get other people to that."
Mm-hmm. So. Good Bible reading, Steve.
Yeah.
Keeping up with it daily. Good.
Okay. I guess the final thing, as we kind of covered those, how do we make some of those improvements? So, or is there any information or reframing of a familiar concept that you'd like to put on the table for further exploration at a future date? So is there anything new? I think one of the things, we kind of talked a little bit about it already, is, and it's conceptually it's hard to do it, but how do we get more focused in on the spiritual aspect of our responsibility, right? And what I mean by that is, I think he says something about, you know, in terms of preaching, there's always going to be somebody that can do a better job of preaching than me, right? So I don't really need to be focusing on preaching. There's probably people that can do a better job of teaching the class, and, you know, maybe occasionally I'll teach a class. But what areas should I really be focusing in on? What has God called me to do? What uniquely has God gifted me to do for his kingdom? And how can I make sure I'm focusing on that piece, on in that area, right? And it's easy to get so distracted with all that's going on that sometimes I lose sight of what that thing is. And so I was just challenging myself to just maybe take some things off the plate so that I can be more focused on where God is really trying to lead me, right? Like, we got some things in front of us right now that we need to do. Like, we're trying to hire a minister, right? We're, you know, we got to make sure that we get that done. We feel like that's something that we need to be doing. We made an intentional decision to do that because of some past experiences. And so, and then I think that's something that we need to be involved in, right? But there are things that may be that I don't need to be involved in, and mm-hmm. I need to figure out what those things are so that I can be more focused on where God has really gifted me and he's calling me to do those things, and so that I'm not distracted from that. So, and I don't know how to get there. I just feel like that's the journey I need to be on right now. I don't know what that looks like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One other takeaway I had from the weekend, and I thought it was good, is the story of the boy who found a horse. So when is something good and when is something bad? And so, you know, how do we judge what's good or bad? So the story of the boy, he finds a horse. Oh, this is the best thing ever. And the wise man said, and what do you think, wise man? He goes, well, let's just wait a while. So then the boy fell off the horse and he broke his arm. And everybody said, oh, this is the worst thing that ever happened. And they asked the wise man, isn't this the worst thing ever? He goes, oh, just wait. Let's see what happens. So there was a war, and so they drafted all the able-bodied men. And so that young boy didn't go to war. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, the moral of the story is you can't see in the moment what God is really trying to do. And so that is so hard for me to get either overjoyed or depressed. Again, we're dealing with so many things. Mm-hmm. And, you know, trusting God, that's a hard thing. Like we talked about in class Sunday is, you know, God, you've been faithful in the past. Let me remember you've been faithful in the past, and I'll trust you.
Yeah.
You know, and I just, you know, that's important, you know, again, in the leadership, just, you know, how do you judge when things are going right or wrong, you know, and, you know, because you could be doing the right thing and you got a broken arm. And
and I always wonder, how do you, how, you know, here, this is all great stuff. It's encouraging. How do we communicate some of that to the church?
Yeah.
And then just even with the search, how do we update them and let them know what's going on with that and
good,
getting them?
Good question.
Yeah, so that's...
I think we should talk a little bit about that tonight, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a great question.
Sometimes we get in a hurry thinking we've got to, like you said, do it. And I really appreciated what Carson said about, you know, the waiting. And I hope that none of us feel so overwhelmed that we can't, you know, make time. Mm-hmm. Prayer is, you know, where you start. I mean, mm-hmm. I'm convinced. But, you know, I feel like I've lived through that story, you know, with what's happened to my girls. And, you know, mm-hmm. when Rachel had her situation, and I remember sitting there going, I wasn't mad at God. I was just saying, this is not what I had in mind for my daughter.
Yeah.
And I kept saying, why, God? And it took 2 years later, but we ended up at Pepperdine, and she's standing in the chapel saying, I don't see as well as I used to, but in other ways I see better. Mm. And I just felt like I had that arrow going through my heart saying, okay, God, I repent and sackcloth and ashes. And, you know, but I think you share your personal stories with people and let them know that, you know, we all go through times of struggle and mm-hmm. we have good times and bad times, but it all centers around God and knowing that he's in charge and, you know, there's so little we can do, you know, it's really up to him. But I think when he was saying you need to be talking to your members, you know, I think it's knowing that you're available. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. you know,
yeah,
I get a lot of phone calls, and you know, I think I'm trying to do that. Mm-hmm. I get up at 6 a.m. and you know, get home late at night so often, mm-hmm. but I feel like Caleb, you know, it's like, okay, I'm here, God, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. let's go. Mm-hmm. And, yeah. and I think that's at least trying to answer maybe something you're saying there, Steve. But,
one question I would have, you're saying several very good things, Brad. This did hit me when we were, it hit me Saturday, and then as you were speaking again, it kind of hit me, is it doesn't seem like we do have very many, because we don't have a Wednesday night, really, where people can, and we don't have a Sunday night, there's so little, there's so few forums, and we have so few that come to Bible class, really. And we're not any different from 95% of the churches out there. That's not really a critique on that. It's just that it's hard to have conversations. Mm-hmm. It's hard to have, I mean, there might be a few folks that, you know, each one of us know, and maybe that's the only way, but it just seems like to have those congregational conversations to help us work through things and move forward is, I don't know that we have a mechanism for that. In other words, and so kind of to your point, Steve, about here we are sharing some stuff that's so good and rich, but then I guess the only outlet is the people that we tend to hang with or whatever. It doesn't feel complete. It doesn't feel complete, but I'm not. And I even felt that Saturday where they were saying, you know, you need to kind of talk to your people about, well, when do we do that? I'm thinking, okay, when do we do that? We have a 22-minute sermon slot. Okay, is that the time? You know, and I don't know that we have other times. And so, anyway, a little bit of a is there a different way we need to even restructure Sunday morning potentially, where we could have a little bit more time to process as a church? And I'm not just saying, okay, let's hand the mic out to everybody, and you know, I don't think that works. Okay, I don't know, it might work set up right, but it's not probably the best practice of what I'm trying to think of. But some way just to be able to, it's just like when Jeremiah and Nathan and I did the collective thing. Lots of feedback that stirred in people, but still we didn't quite get to finish in a sense, because it was still a very one directional kind of communication where it would have been so much stronger if we could have even figured out how to process that. Mm-hmm. But the time was up and away we go, and then we got something the next week, and yeah. you get what I'm trying to say.
I really like where you're going with this, and I think that that if we give it some thought, we can figure some things out. I think we can. I think, you know, we're looking at the old model.
Yeah.
And we're evaluating based on how the old model works. And, you know, and the things when you're describing it, that was based on like an old model. That's not an effective way.
The Wednesday night and the Sunday night, that's not going to come back.
Yeah, and even the communication of the Bible study. And so I think, you know, we need to figure, and maybe it's multiple channels.
Yes.
You know, and I don't know what that looks like. Yeah. But we need, I think it's worthwhile trying to work through some of that and figure that out, because you know, I think that's one of the things that we tend to like, wow, I thought we communicated that. You know, we have that conversation. I thought we communicated that, or, you know, maybe I just miscommunicated some things. I think having some way of communicating and getting feedback, creating dialogue, you know, will be very important. And so I think we can maybe spend some time, maybe this is the last one, we can spend some time figuring that out, put that on our agenda, where we want to kind of think through that a little bit more and figure out how we can create that dialogue.
It is really hard to view things through the mind of the congregant, because we have all these discussions here and outside of here, and they don't. It's just really hard to think through their minds. And I'm also looking forward to getting the recordings, because so much, some of you guys said, I don't remember that. Mm-hmm. And you know, part of my brain was thinking, okay, Chick-fil-A, we got to get that thing. Kids got to get all that stuff. So I'm looking forward to coming back. And Jeff did a great job.
Missed 22 minutes before Chick-fil-A. Huh?
Yeah.
Thanks, Jeff.
You really struck me when I just thought, when we have pancake breakfast in here and, you know, people come and really enjoy it, you know, and they talk and they visit and so on. There's something about the action of eating that gives you opportunity.
That's a good point.
I thought, you know, we did this years ago, but maybe, you know, putting donuts in the gym early and inviting people to come and just sit and talk and drink coffee,
Or maybe even doing that
at lunch.
At the normal, doing that at the normal start time and just pushing service back by 20 minutes or something. Because they get people
the
to
new,
show up.
When the new preacher comes, we can time, you get 10 minutes. Sorry.
Yeah. I would think rather than doing it before, you do it after. It's taking advantage. Like, we don't have a lot of the common meals planned because they're a lot of work. But what if you had Chick-fil-A?
Well, they're not open on Sundays.
Yeah. Raising canes.
What if you had day old Chick-fil-A?
Yeah, right.
But some way just to make it easy for people so that the point is being together, and it is have that, like the Chick-fil-A is so good because it can happen so fast, so easily, and nobody complains, and everybody's happy with the set. You know, it may not be the best meal in the world, but it's enough to accomplish what you're trying to do, which would be to have this conversation. I guess is what I'm pointing back to the original idea. Then you use it as a conversation time, but they're not open.
Yes, because one of the biggest things that we've talked about in spiritual formation, I think a couple of times, is that we can make it sort of the best quality of anything. But the problem is if we don't have enough quantity, then the quality is worthless almost because it's just like we have our 15-minute Bible class that's really great. It's the best message we've ever given. But they walk right on out.
They never talk about it.
And so that's where missing the Sunday evening, Wednesday, that's what happened. We had all that quantity time. We thought, well, nobody's coming. Well, there were people coming, but it's not. So I'm not about getting it restarted. I'm just about the idea of we have to have quantity with the quality as well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Sounds like a monthly potluck. Get back to the monthly potluck.
Yeah. And on that, I've never found value in group discussions with feedback. You know, I don't see that ever does anything. Now, what to me, I think there's a great value, and it's like what you have got us doing on class on Sundays. You know, hey, there's an elder, four people go sit with this elder, and let's talk through these topics. And so that makes sense to me, but anytime we have like a group discussion with an open mic, I have never found that to be valuable. So that's just my thoughts on that.
And we've heard that before too from you, Brett.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
and I understand there's a lot of times not, but I think there are other people that just can't seem to catch on until that happens.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying?
Well,
that's kind of their vehicle through of learning,
right?
Because it takes either them expressing something, and the only thing they remember is what they expressed,
right?
I understand it,
but you have 100 people, and it's always the three people that talk, and it's like, well, what are the other 98 thinking? Well, we don't know because it's always the three people, you know, you just can't get away from that, And so anyway, I understand that there's something we're trying to do, but I just don't think that would accomplish the goal.
And I guess I disagree, and I've disagreed before. The whole the process is something I think is important, to give people a chance to listen and talk. And I think that is, there's value in just the process of the whole thing.
And I think the greatest opportunity for success in that is in the small groups, because if you're in a small group,
I think that is a yes.
Consistently,
yeah.
Any barriers are going to break down, so that those eight that don't talk will talk.
I fully agree.
And there's a trust that's built. There's a camaraderie that's built that opens up doors for communication. But the key is, how do you get people to commit to it?
Yeah. Right. Well, and I think we do what we can, and we have to be willing to wash our hands. It's like, we've given you every opportunity.
That's the vehicle.
Right, that we've given you every opportunity.
We remind everybody every week.
Yeah, and find a way that's like, okay, here's an email. You know, email the elders, email the shepherd. If you got any questions, if there's anything rubbing you the wrong way, let us know. But yeah, give them an opportunity for feedback, and yeah, I mean, just...
Weirdly enough, though, I will say this. This is the word I thought of this morning. We went through a merger, and I think we've come through the merger. We are now...
How many years?
It's taken this long.
Yeah.
It's taken this long. I think we are now in an emergent phase where we are... You could say re-emerging, but I like emergent even better. That we are... And that there is... a new organic dynamic in the body.
Yeah.
Just, I would say, in the last, I don't know what the time is, it's little by little, so it's hard to put an exact date to it, but that I think is there, and I'll just say this from the standpoint of negativism and negative kind of feedback, I think it's a lot lower. I'm not saying it doesn't, you know, I've always got things to grumble about, but it feels a lot lower than it's been since. And so all that is to say, all I'm trying to say is counterbalance. Even these, there's a lot of trust right now that we're making some good changes and that we're working on some things. So
we've moved from howitzers to pea shooters.
Yes. All right. So, yeah, exactly.
Part of the challenge, too, is, diversity.
Yeah.
When you have a lot of diversity, which we have some, I mean, not overwhelmed, but we have some, is that... people hear different kind of based on age, gender, other reference points in terms of, and so how do you speak to those things? I think how you say things, you might have to say that same thing four or five times a different way so that people can hear it, right? And so, I think that's part of the challenge is understanding, how we communicate to our group. Is real important, and so that you tend to communicate the way you communicate, but sometimes you may need to rethink how you communicate it because the way you communicate is really not effective. Yeah. And so just thinking about, how you're communicating to the group, it might be, a worthwhile kind of exercise as well, So I think the other thing is very organic because you coming through this emergence period is that. We're changing constantly, different flow of people coming in here, it kind of changes the feel. It's like you're talking about Sunday, that was a unique experience. Yeah. Sunday, being here Sunday, it was just kind of a unique experience, and we're having more of those, So I think just kind of, trying to better understand what it means to be a diverse group and how we communicate in a way that we can be heard.
Mm. Mm-hmm. So I just had, on the topic of small groups being like a good point for conversation to hear back from people, what about doing some kind of way to like highlight the small groups? Like maybe, like say during our PowerPoint in the morning announcements or something, every once in a while, like have, each week have a one page for one of the small groups that's looking for new members that like talks about some people they're in, when they like to meet, who you should contact if you're interested, and just kind of remind people it's very like I remember before I joined a small group, like when I first came, I got that list of small groups, like, okay, that's something I need to do, and then it was gone, and it was like
it wasn't in front of you,
so maybe ways to make it seem very accessible and maybe even appealing. Or maybe even get people from the small groups to get up on a Sunday morning and invite people to come join them. Like, hey, we're talking about this next week, and we'd really love if somebody came.
I think what you're saying is great. I mean, the best practices in the churches that really have thriving groups is that there's some kind of mentioning every week. Okay, and so I think you're just hitting that. Whether that's having a group leader stand up or recognize this group just did this, or to highlight a group and say, come on to this. But if there's some tiny, it only takes 45 seconds, but there's some call out each week. And we just haven't ever quite turned the corner to do that real well.
So what action step, if any, do we want to walk away from in terms of the debriefing and what happened on Saturday in terms of the sessions, what we heard, what we learned? Is there, we talked about the communication, so do we want to make those action steps? I mean, is there any thing that you guys see we can be thinking about and tabling for a little while, but bringing it back full circle so we can maybe dig a little deeper, or you know, anything come to mind?
Okay. I love the one, I mean, just as the last one right there, as one, kind of looking backwards, but I can't remember the rest of it. but you know, just working with that small step and thinking about how to do that with Dale Simpson or mm-hmm. with whomever, in terms of kind of making the re-pledge to get something highlighted mm-hmm. each week about the small groups.
Small groups, yeah. Okay.
So just as a one little tiny piece of this, and I do think it's a key part of the communication.
Well, yeah. One thing he's been trying to get is the pictures of the small groups that he's gotten to.
Yeah, yeah.
We hope we can remember yeah. Sunday night to do it and just put those pictures up.
That's mm-hmm. good.
Yeah. And he gets a little frustrated with the group leaders because yeah. people kind of ignore them, and everybody does their own thing, and so it is a little, they're hard to work with, but still, there's maybe a different way to go about it.
Maybe yeah. the other thing to put on the table is, you know, our communication strategy, how we want to better communicate mm-hmm. to the congregation, yeah. you know, how do we think through that? You know, in terms of, does it mean different channels? Does it mean different places we communicate? Does it mean, you know, how the verbiage? I mean, what does that look like so that we can make sure that we're breaking through, right? You know, people hear. And so, and how do we create, you know, avenues for feedback? You know, create a dialogue chain, whatever. And so I think working through that might be really worthwhile. And so because at the end of the day, you know, we want the congregation to know that they've been heard and they have and that we also want to make sure that if there's something worthwhile we want to communicate to the congregation, that they hear what we're trying to communicate.
Do we ever have I've just missed it, like an open invitation, like a specific time that the elders are available for people to come and ask questions or talk to?
Yeah, we do Sunday mornings.
Oh, just like the general at the end of prayer time?
Before.
Obviously last week was the first time I heard about that.
Yeah. So. See, we need to communicate that more, too. Yeah. We need to communicate that maybe.
It is in the bulletin.
Yeah.
You know, it's obvious.
Every Sunday.
But
yeah.
it's not.
Is that bulletin? Yeah. I paid to announce
it. But it is interesting how it,
I know, it's just.
Never connected.
That's the case in point. You know, we need more channels. Communicate that in more channels and maybe more frequencies.
And maybe most people just have never, you know, like you're thinking, okay, no way I'm going to be there at 8:45 with the family and all that. So you've never given it, like your brain has never allowed it to be an option.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But if you think about it, it's hard to do it though too, because the thing is that Ross shows up on Sunday morning, he watches, and we announce it at church.
Yeah.
He has to wait now a week. And remember next week on Sunday morning to show up early.
If it's still on my heart, it'll wait a week.
It's possible.
Yeah.
Or in the same thing with Wednesday, that you may see it Wednesday in the bulletin, and by the time you get to Sunday morning, in the rush of everything, you forget about it, or you get there late, and you miss out. So that's...
Mm. Well, I think, too,
I'm there when every time I think I need to be there, I go. But and so I made it twice.
And we've not had many people take us up on it.
We have not.
So maybe that's not a good...
Well, also, people might just feel comfortable talking to their elders in their small groups and stuff.
Yeah. I was going to say, I think...
That's not what that avenue I would choose personally.
We had to develop that too. I think that people could feel like they could call, you know, Brett or Dave or me or whoever, and they do that some, you know, and kind of voice questions or concerns or that way too, you know, because it doesn't have to be before the tribunal or anything.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, just put a little pressure on. Yeah. So I've been before a tribunal. It's not good. It feels bad. Yeah.
It is fun. It's really fun over the phone. Where you're not even seeing them in person. So how did it used to work when after church one of the pairs, like the couples, would be up there front in the front. Did you guys have much more people?
Oh yeah, that's familiar. Yeah, I feel like when I first started, happening. Yeah,
it was happening, but. Where, like, usually, like, Sean, you and Debbie would be up front, or Steve and Gwen.
I liked that because, like, to me, when I heard, like, shepherding couples, I liked the idea that maybe women feel more comfortable talking to a woman. Mm-hmm. And so you're making that opportunity for them to do that. Mm-hmm. Did COVID make that quit? Or
maybe no
one was coming up there.
I think about that, too.
Feeling like maybe it was very effective, and so we stopped saying it. I don't know if that's good or bad.
Maybe we need to rethink it a little bit, because sometimes people don't want to be up front.
Yeah.
You know, they don't, you know, it's awkward for people to walk up front, and because they say, oh, I'm walking up front, talk to other people, thinking I got some problems in my life. Yeah, right. You know, so I think if we can figure out a way to make it a little bit more.
There's a hidden room somewhere in the building. Yeah. You have to find the idea.
We take the donut idea. We say, okay, after church, this shepherding couple is going to have the donuts this week. Come and get a donut and say hi to them. That might create an opportunity for someone to make a little connection. Yeah. When they're talking to you, remind you, hey, I've got a phone number. Anytime you need something, call me.
Yeah.
Call my wife.
I think, truthfully, there's a lot of time in the foyer that people, are sharing. And
this church has the best foyer. best foyer atmosphere.
It's awesome.
Yeah, absolutely.
But we're old enough to where we can't hear well out there. I'm speaking for myself, but I know.
I'm right there with you. But it was funny last week because we didn't have classes, and then I got Kay Lynn to finally show me how to get the church app on my phone. First, I thought, hey, this is great. it is that one-to-one, interaction with people that, brings folks back. The ones who head for the door, soon as services are over and they're out the door, you can't build a church with people like that. I mean, it doesn't work.
Yeah.
If they come and put money in the pot, we'll let them do that. But, what we really want are servants who are willing to serve. And I was thinking along your lines about, all the work that you did last week and everything that you did with that.
So what?
All the work that you were doing last week to get that thing. I mean, I saw you running in with the lemonade and all the other stuff. And I thought, Steve really probably could use some help.
Well, but I'll just say, I didn't do much. I just did that day and then, setting up, which was really cool how everybody worked together. So I didn't feel, I was just... Come on, Alec, get here with you.
He's underestimating himself a little. He did do a lot of work.
Yeah,
but that being said, we had a good team.
Yeah,
we did. With the area ministers and with all of our staff.
Staff here.
Every one of them was amazing.
Yeah.
And then Jeff, add to that.
Yeah.
He could have been staff. He was unpaid staff for the day. Yeah. So it was really good.
Yeah.
Well, my back hurt when I went home that afternoon.
Putting a stack of chairs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think, like you said, using that time frame and allowing people to continue to mingle and talk and whatever has more opportunity to it than maybe what, we haven't experienced yet.
Yeah.
And I don't know the magic way to make that happen, but, we've got
it's hard to do that and anything else. That's the problem. I mean, I only say that because we've struggled. And again, we're not going to solve it here. But I feel bad leaving the foyer. Coming up to lead my class. Because I'm needed in terms of conversations with people in the forum.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so.
But also, I feel bad if I'm getting late to class.
Well, yes. I'm like, okay, then you introduce, you get things started, and then you got these, people.
30% of your class coming in. Yeah.
Okay, I don't know the winning combo for that whatsoever. Yeah. But it does again display that people do need that human touch and that interaction and that connection And again, if I there's one thing that I hear about our church, it's that. It's the warm sense of connection.
Yeah.
And so in a way we almost interfere with it a bit by trying to start the Bible class and get people up here. And,
yeah.
So Jeff, as I think about it, we've always been so hesitant to move the Bible class to before church.
Yeah.
And I wonder, as a brainstorming thought, if we were to move it to before church, and we were to have donuts after church, or whatever, cookies or whatever, that would then give us the ability after church to hang out.
And which we did that for a while.
We've only been together.
Yeah.
So McKnight used to have it. No, you guys even had it.
We
after
made cookies
too,
for weeks and weeks.
Yeah, months.
And then Daniel.
They had the cookies job. Yeah. But that was still after church, before Bible class, I think.
But I'm just thinking something that would make it where we would not be rushed after. to go to class because that would make us. You could stay out down there the whole time.
Doesn't matter to me. Number one, I'm retiring.
You sound like me now.
I'm just teasing.
So we have to get it implemented before.
I sit on the spiritual formation, so I can usually push it through there too. Yeah. But it was just the opposite of that. The reason we moved it is because it was really, it seemed so hard for the families to get here early. Therefore, we thought, okay, if they're already here, then we'll have a better chance of capturing them and the kids and the kids program.
Real talk, my attendance Bible class is much better with this format that we have right now. Because when we're running late and everybody's running late, we're not going to miss church. Let's get going. I guess we got to miss Bible class this week.
And so that's what kind of happened.
Let's just make it a lottery.
I understand. Some of those. Just make it a lottery. You don't know till you get here.
There you go.
We ordered a bunch of pizzas. They're in the gym. We can have Bible class, but if you come down here, you can have pizza.
But maybe even having, if the action step, Steve, and again, we can think it through, and I don't know who does the thinking through of this, but, you could use the fifth Sunday, or, maybe there are more, designated times, 4 to 6 times a year, that they were either, we didn't have the traditional Bible, you didn't have to go off to the class. It was either more about foyer, or if Brett is running a marathon that day, then we could do a congregational discussion of some kind.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? But some kind of little.
I just got that.
time where we sort of processed that just as a church.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, guys. Great discussion. I think it was healthy that we processed some of that information we learned.
And just done a little wild hair. If we had chairs instead of pews, it would be. Help us to have more discussion.
It's true.
So we can
go on. And we just have food in there.
Yeah.
So audio should be available, I think, Sunday.
Okay,
great. My guess. I should ping Brian just to make sure. But I have an audio version, but because of the sound issues that we had, it's not super quality.
Oh, wow.
But he thinks that he should be able to fix it and make it sound
good.
Audio from Saturday?
Yeah.
Oh, great. Fantastic.
And if you want PowerPoints and stuff like that, I have them on the same thing, so we just need to figure out where we want to put it.
Yeah,
and if we want to put it on the website or something, sort of locked, like we have our member stuff.
Does it need to be locked?
Well, that way, I don't know how private they want.
That's
that.
That's what my question would be, because it'd be a little cumbersome to lock it, maybe. But
I think we talked about maybe
if they don't care.
Sending out an email to all the participants that we have emails for, and just giving them a link.
That's what I thought too. So just having a location where the PowerPoint is at, as well as then the audios.
That's good.
I'm sorry. I'm just talking to
So the Vision Elders has been meeting a couple times. We just got a lot of work to do. But we want to kind of give you guys an update where we are. Apologize for sending out that link very late on Michael's, Santiago. You probably haven't had a chance to look at the video yet, but he's the first candidate that Steve actually brought him on board. And then Steve, you can maybe talk about the two other candidates potentially that we have. and so, Steve, I'll let you talk about a little bit about Michael if you
okay.
want to.
The way I got his name was he had called Mike Brown from Lafayette, talking to him about some things. Mike is works with NCYM, so he has that connection. He talked to him about he was kind of surprised that he's feeling a calling to preach. And so then Mike said, maybe you should call Steve Autry. They're looking for somebody, going to be looking for somebody. So he called me. We talked a little bit, and then he sent me his cover letter and resume. So that's what you guys have in your email. And then he was at NCYM. I got to talk with him there. And he's from Tampa Bay, moved to Harrison. You'll hear that in the sermon. I thought he was from Chicago first then, but he's got family in Chicago too. And he said, when we were talking, he's like, yeah, my family's all messed up. I got my dad that lives in Las Vegas. I got family members or gang members in Chicago and so, all that. And he's Puerto Rican. And one thing I was really impressed with, he said, I didn't plan on leaving youth ministry. I plan on doing this forever, for a long time. He said, but I just feel a calling to preach, and it's been on his heart for a while. And he said, and the strange thing is, I'm really happy where I'm at. I love the church I'm with. I love the elders. He's got a good salary. He's at a good church, good team, youth group, all that. He said, but I'm wanting to get out of the Bible Belt. This is kind of what he said. He wants to come up more into a mission area. And I was kind of surprised that I was so impressed, to be honest. I thought, he's young. He's in his 20s. And so that's
married.
Where we
mm-hmm. yeah. With a child.
Married and a child.
Yeah, married and a child. Got a 9 or 10 month old child. Mm-hmm. His wife is from Cabot, Arkansas, I believe. And then his mom lives in Harrison, Arkansas. So that's...
So the way we are proposing that we do this is, I'll just kind of go this real quickly, is that when we receive a resume, we have a criteria that we're going to look at to see, and the criteria is driven by what Jeff has given us in terms of the senior minister responsibility, and he kind of ordered these in orders of importance in terms of how he sees the role. And so when we look at a resume, we're going to be looking at it. Can we determine, hey, well, we're going to get a video as well, so we'll be able to see preaching in a video. And is there anything in the resume that will help us understand the level of teaching experience? And then ministry development is the third thing that we're going to look at, and then congregational leadership maybe. So
on this real quick, is this just for the candidate we're looking at now, or is this a general flow?
General flow, yeah.
General flow.
So, all right. So we're going to start. So there's a requirement. So I think we're missing some steps. So how do we get to an individual? I mean, how are we talking to these people or finding candidates?
So this doesn't take in consideration that. This taking consideration.
So somebody's reached out to them, and so
let me back up a little bit. Is that this is based on kind of the soft approach that we're working with right now. And so that is coming through our warm network, mm-hmm. right? And so those are people that maybe we know, or we know of someone. And so that's how we're envisioning those things are happening, because this is based, you know, this is not where we're reaching out, you know, have that kind of thing, have a more formal kind of solicitation process.
And so for everybody you reach out to, you require their resume and a preaching video? Yeah. Is that what it is? Okay.
Yes. Everybody that wants to submit that, you know, credentials will be mm-hmm. a resume and a preaching video. And then then once we look at that video, we're going to try to use the criteria that I described earlier, the key competencies, based on what Jeff laid out. And can we find those in the video or in the resume? And if we say, well, yeah, we can see some of those things. And then we're going to bring them to you guys for a recommendation for a phone interview, like we did with Michael. And if you guys say okay, well, then we will do the phone interview.
Let me just emphasize that this is confidential. Just like Michael, one of his Facebook friends is your sister-in-law,
what's her name? Your sister-in-law in Abilene? Sue's sister. Roberta, yeah.
Okay.
And so their church doesn't know he's even looking right now. So we got to make sure that we're very careful with this as far as being confidential.
Okay. So if the person, if we see his resume and look at the video and we don't really see anything there, we're probably not going to recommend him for a phone interview. And then Brett, do you still want to be the person that kind of tracks and files all these things? Okay. Yeah. And if that's the case, we'll let Brett know. We'll send whatever we got. If Brett wants to keep that somewhere in some kind of warehouse and that, we'll take care of that. But if we think he's somebody that we want to move forward, we'll bring him, like we did with Michael, to you guys and let you guys say, so yeah, I think we can go forward with the with the phone interview. And if you say no for whatever reason, maybe there's some sensitive information we don't know about him, that maybe Brad may know something about the guy and say, mm-hmm. Hey, you know what, you may guys probably didn't know this, but I don't think you'd make a good candidate because of this information. And so that's why we want to bring him before this larger group, right? And
so question.
Yeah.
So the first green box for the phone interview, that's not the Vision Elders performing a phone interview, but seeing that you recommend them to push forward for a phone interview, which happens way down later. Okay.
Right. So that question mark's like,
So that just pushes it down.
Yes, sir. Okay. Yes, sir.
And we'll have some questions.
To hear. Gotcha.
Same questions for phone interviews.
Yeah. This makes sense.
Okay. And so if he does meet the qualifications for the phone interview, at least kind of bring him before the larger group, and you guys say, okay, then we'll do the phone interview. And then the phone interview, again, we're going to try to get to understand his or her, his experience preaching, teaching, ministry development, congregational leadership. Those are the kind of things. And here are some of the questions that we have developed for the phone interview. So you get a sense of that.
So you envision a phone interview, Zoom interview, in person
is
a sequence.
Yes, yes.
As someone moves forward.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And then the phone interview, we can probably do two people on that if you do a speakerphone. And that's how we envision that happening. And then if the person makes it to the next level, which is a Zoom, we thought three, and if two Vision Elders or anybody else that wants to join that would be more than welcome to join it. But we also are going to videotape that and make that available if you can't be on the live Zoom. The videotape will be available, and then when we begin to debrief that candidate, you have the background information that, from the interview, you can determine whether or not it's somebody you want to bring in for in person. And then at that time, we will bring them in for an in person based on that kind of scenario.
So the phone interview would just be two or three people? Is that we're talking? Two people on a phone. And then if they make it through that, then it'll be the wider group.
It'll be at least three people on the Zoom.
Okay.
But then we're going to videotape it. So if you're not on the Zoom live, you'll be able to see the videotape at a later date before we make a decision whether or not to bring them in for an in-person.
Walker's got another career doing this.
I know, he does. Yeah.
He's one for one with Jeremiah, so we're just going to let him take it.
A couple of questions. As we were working through this, we did answer some of the questions, but we had a couple more questions. We still need to develop the question for the Zoom. We have not developed that. We're trying to develop a system where maybe we can do some rating, in terms of, but we have not come to that point yet. And so the other question I think that came out of this is that at what point do we want to involve Jeremiah and Nathan in the process? We need to think through that a little bit. It doesn't seem to make sense to get them involved with the phone interview at all, but maybe not even the Zoom, but so we need to think about where we want to involve them. And then to Steve's point, when and what should we communicate to the congregation? At what point should we provide congregational communication in this process? And so that we can keep them in the loop in terms of what's happening. And so we need to think through that a little bit. When is the best time to do the communication and what type of communication that we want to provide to congregation.
So just to throw out some answers to those questions that can be picked apart here. I would involve Jeremiah and Nathan a little later in the process. Clearly, the in-person.
In-person.
You know, big part of the day or weekend.
Yeah.
Whether one of them is in the Zoom interview might be an insightful thing. I don't know how many participants you envision on that. That makes sense. But earlier than that doesn't make sense to me for them. They're busy guys and, you know, that kind of thing. And then communicating to the congregation, I kind of like the idea of once a month, first Sunday, last Sunday, hey, we've talked to three candidates. Nobody's moved past a phone interview. Okay. Or we've got one guy we think we're going to try to bring in March. Or you don't have to give names.
Just
but
like a
things
minute
are
or two update. Mm-hmm.
Just an update once a month, maybe. We, we from the pulpit, we just let them know something's happening or we're stalled out.
Yeah, I think that would be good to let them keep letting them know prime
correct.
The pulpit something's
wherever
happening.
Wherever we are, and, you know, hey, we got three people we like that are, we've talked to two out of the three, and, you know, we'll do a Zoom interview soon or something.
Okay.
Just a, you know, general picture of movement and description.
Okay.
And I think even just reminding them that we're looking for the warm network now, and they can be a part of that warm network.
Yeah.
Just remind them of that.
And that way, some interval like that sounds pretty good.
So maybe to your point is that if we want to involve Jeremiah and Nathan in the Zoom, just sending them a copy of the Zoom might be the...
Be program. Adequate.
Yeah,
yeah, I think that if most of the elders aren't going to be at the Zoom, there's no reason for us to put Jeremiah or Nathan in the Zoom with them. I think it's probably better for them to watch. They could watch the Zoom.
And I think they will. Like I think they'll have enough skin in the game, so to speak, to want to watch it, but they wouldn't necessarily have to be doing it.
Yeah.
And I think it's also important for them, even if it wasn't, even if they weren't on staff, just to have a generational view. Because I think our perceptions of people can be quite different based on
And I think it's important to have them as part of the process because it's going to affect them more than it will us in so many ways because they'll be working together.
So other than those two, it kind of begs the question, is anybody else on our team particularly gifted to involve, you know, I don't know if Elizabeth or Kay Lynn or whoever else might come to mind. I wouldn't think of them immediately either, but I'm just throwing that out.
Involved in which step?
Pardon me?
Involved in which step?
I don't know. Same kind of thing with Jeremiah and Nathan. I mean, when it's in person, we've got a lot of folks. But I don't know if, let's just say Elizabeth, you know, she's a master interviewer. She'll help us come up with questions. And she knows how to read people. If that was our decision, hey, she ought to be involved in the Zoom interview. Or
that's something. HR background probably be a good thing.
She does. But, hey, that doesn't mean I'm recommending. I'm just kind of, hey, is it more than those two that we want to tap their talent?
I would be okay. This is just my two cents, Dave, kind of like you're picking apart. But I would be okay with if, for sure, if they got the Zoom. I don't even think they have, everybody has to get the Zoom. But if Nathan and Jeremiah get the Zoom, I think that's important for the ministers. I'm a little more sensitive just to the time.
Yeah.
On the others, on Elizabeth, who's just putting in way too many hours. Her dad's not doing well, and we just can't, you know, we've, any number of ways we've tried to draw those boundaries, and it doesn't ever work. Okay. And so I don't want to do more to aggravate it.
That's a good observation.
And I would say pretty much the same thing with Kay Lynn.
Okay.
She has more to do than she can accomplish in the 20 hours. She's done fantastic in the 20 hours. But that's what she wants to work. That's all she wants to work, and she's got other obligations. And so, I don't think it's needed until they do the in person. Okay. At that point, then I think it's, you know, we'd want to be involved in the, if the person comes into town, be involved in that.
Good. That makes sense.
So the format of the in person. What did you guys think of the format we used for Nathan? It was a little bit more informal. Or do we want to go to something that we've used in the past where we have them here in a big circle? So what are you guys thinking in terms of how do you want to flesh through the in-person
Can we do a combination of both?
Okay. Go ahead, Steve.
But that's a lot.
So we had two elder couples in homes.
We have a lot less elders now.
We do. So. We do.
But also with Nathan and even with the children's minister, like with Jeremiah's, it was also a panel that was also interviewing him too. So in reality, it was very large of a concept. So
even before they got here.
Because we sat in a circle right here, mm-hmm. bouncing questions off of all of our candidates. Mm-hmm. So I know that happened. And then you guys had it may have been informal, but mm-hmm. but we had hammered on yeah. before, and you guys got to see the videos of that. So.
And are we going to do that? Is that something you like? Or that sounds painful.
Whatever we do is going to be painful.
Yeah, well, more. Yeah, but hopefully it'll be painful for a reason. So.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Yeah, so it depends on, Jeff, you probably didn't have to go through all of that. But, I mean, that's traditionally what a preacher would think. That's what they expect to yeah, come from it. Right. For the youth minister and children's minister, generally they don't expect as much that we put them through.
Right. Yeah, probably not.
But, but for the preacher, it's... Yeah, I know that historically that's a lot of what I went through.
Yeah, does Seibert and that stuff that you have from Seibert, does it have anything in there about interview weekends?
I'd have to look, Steve. Yeah. I don't remember. I never looked at that specifically for that. They might.
Yeah, did you send me the entire thing or just part of it?
A few weeks ago, I guess.
Yeah, okay.
But I can look at it.
And I think this is great. And you know, send me the Vizio if you would. And you know, I think we're fine to at least get the first green box started, you know, because I'm thinking through this so we've got the first green box. It's a telephone interview, which hopefully it's like, you know, 10, 15 minutes and you get a feel for the guy. You know, hey, we like him. We're going to push him forward. Then you got a video interview, which is just a couple people, mm-hmm. more intense. And again, you kind of get a feel for it. But there's a big jump from that interview to bringing him on in my head is because there is a commitment there on both sides. And, mm-hmm. and it's like, I'm trying to think, it seems like there should be something in between. And I'm not saying I know what that is, but mm-hmm. I don't know that we have to figure it out tonight, but I'm just saying that there is a big jump from the two-person video conference interview to bringing him here on site. Yeah. And I don't know how to bridge that or, you know, hey, here's a guy. And you know, if anybody wants to have a second interview, you know, get on call with them or something like that before we bring them here.
Well, I think what we can do is like, okay, so we're going to have 2 to 3 people on the Zoom interview.
Right.
Then we're going to make that video available to the larger group. And we'll have a discussion about that, right?
Right.
And then we can decide, you know what, maybe we need to do something else. You know, maybe we need to, you know, do another Zoom with them.
Yeah.
You know,
there's something here. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think once we go through the Zoom interview and we don't feel like we're comfortable bringing them in, but we still want to continue to engage with them, we can determine, hey, maybe another Zoom, or we can, depending on where he's at, we can go visit him. I mean, there's different things that we can do that not going to require him to make that kind of commitment.
Right. And I think that's good to, you know, there's a box in there. You know, we'll decide, we can call an audible because unlike most the people I hire at work, which is on qualifications, you're also hiring a personality. So you have to, okay, him and his family and his wife, you got as people, how are they? And so half of my decision is going to be my wife. You know, it's like, you know, what do you think of his wife? And because, you know, again, he's Latino and my wife can, you know, Latino and, you know, let's talk about some of that. And so, again, there's a big jump and it's there's a box for, we'll deal with it when we get there. I think that's good.
Okay. So the other thing I would throw out there, so you have the Zoom, but you have his references too. So I think before we actually get to meet together to talk about the Zoom after we've watched it, probably whoever's running who did the Zoom probably should be the ones in charge of reaching out to those references and getting that information. What they think, why he was fired, why he left, why this and that, and then
even
just
prior to the
actual meeting together.
I like that.
So we sit down and we have that information as well
at
that meeting.
At what time?
So after the Zoom,
right?
Before we meet to discuss if we want to move forward any further. So while the others are watching the Zoom. to a point. So it's not going to happen. So like say Steve and Steve are doing the Zoom.
Yeah.
To make it easy for him to remember Steve when he talks to him. but they do that, and so then they pass the Zoom to us, let's say the next night, and then they start working on references, like talking to each of them, split the references, talk about it, then say the next week, a week later, we all get together and talk about the Zoom, talk about the references, talk about what the next steps are with the audible question. Mm-hmm. And then we decide Steve or Jeff or somebody's going to go meet him in somewhere and go sit down with him. Or
so when do we start interrogating them with the, you know, Enneagram and all the personality indexes and all that?
Generally, we, on every candidate, I didn't look at his, it didn't have it, I don't think, but every candidate that we got for youth minister put it on there.
Yeah.
We didn't ask anything. They were, it was on every last one of the resumes, and I'm like, that's strange.
Yeah.
That's a bother to me because of what they're portraying. But it seems that that's a new resume piece for youth ministry, at least. And I would almost say that the preachers are going to be the same exact way.
Yeah. And we didn't get, I don't think he said, but he may have told me what his was. I don't remember.
They could tell me whatever, and I wouldn't.
Hopefully he did.
What it means, and I wouldn't care. So.
Yeah. And then another thing is the timing. Okay, so we have this one, and then Carson said he had another possible candidate. So I texted him asking him, is he prepared to give us that name, or is he prepared to tell him to call us or whatever? That's another candidate, and then the other candidate is Kaylin and Travis's friend, who's a missionary in Chile, who's been there for 10 years, but is going to be coming back. So if we have three coming in, you know, we got to tell them yes or no within a period of time, and we wouldn't tell him yes or no until we've looked at those that we already have. The whole timing part is just a head scratcher for me.
For which part of it?
For saying so say Michael, we interview him and we like him, but we're not willing to say yes yet because we want to look at John.
So you're saying get all the way through to the bottom and then bring on the other guy. Okay.
Yeah, and I'm asking questions.
It's not clear to him.
Yeah, it's not clear.
So I would say probably, so you get through the first piece, and so say you have three known candidates or somewhat known candidates. You get through the step one, and you say,
what's step one?
Step one is the telephone call.
Okay.
And you say, we like all three of them enough to move them to Zoom. And you don't have to do, you could say just one at a time, though.
Yeah.
So you talk to one, he's good enough to move to Zoom, there's no question. Number two, he's good. Number three, and they could be simultaneously or disconnected even.
Mm-hmm.
And you get to the Zooms, and you start having these Zooms, and then you make a decision. Yeah, we don't like number two.
Mm-hmm.
We're not even going to have a meeting to discuss it, because in the Zoom, you guys can tell we can't have him here.
Yeah.
But you decide then on the other two how you're going to do it. Because you've now decided that the other two are good enough probably to at least move to the next step, the audible step. Or you move them to all the way to, hey, we need to bring him in 2 months. Mm-hmm. Or like Jeff's going to be out of town, let's bring him in that weekend because we know this number one is really good. Number two, we're going to just breathe on. Maybe even we have him. We're going to say, hey, we're still working on things. Let's meet in person or something. We may not move him all the way to in person yet because we still are just not 100% positive behind him. But after one comes and we're like, yeah, he burped really loud in front of everybody. There's no way he can be the PR preacher.
Yeah,
like so just some random.
Exactly.
So, right. So in my head, this is a soft search. Hey, what's God bringing us? Yeah. And so I think, if there's somebody to talk to, we talk to them all the way down to the video call. Hey, a couple of people call him. Hey, this guy's he's got legs. And then you have the video call. Seems okay. Then
you know, for, again, from there to bring them on, that's a big step. And so if there's somebody in the wings, I'll say, let's at least listen to
get them started.
If we think that there's somebody in the wings, I wouldn't wait on a bird in the bush, you know. Mm-hmm. And
one thing,
if we do, I would bring them in.
Took issue with Carson was he was saying, oh, if you get a good one, you got to go get them real quick. And in my head, that doesn't resonate. It just, you know, to me, I would rather, you know, if we lost an opportunity, I still think that God's going to let us know, you know, who the right one is. And I, you know, the idea of jumping on the first one just...
No, but I think the same thing, though, is if the first one looks good, there's no reason to wait. And it's like, because, you know, if he's checking all the boxes, you know, and I think, I think we need to be ready to act. I'm not saying we have to act, but we should be ready to act.
So step one through three should be very timely. Step four is the one where we wait and deliberate. Yeah.
And in step four, I'm thinking of Michael. He's going to come up here for something for a weekend when he's there, and people are going to start asking questions. So we have to be very committed. Mm. Not that we have to commit.
Correct.
But to get to that point. And then, but the situation in our country with preachers are, there's a lot of churches out there wanting people. So I think that's what Carson probably meant, that if we see somebody we like.
I totally agree, though. It's not like just one great candidate, we got to catch them because it's great. We should be good for them, too. Like they should see us and say, this is a good match for me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we had one candidate for the youth ministry that we were interested in. We moved toward the idea. I think we even had the Zoom interview. And we were pretty positive. We were starting to work on arranging a time for him to come in. And by the time we got a time for him, he's like, I already have a job. Mm-hmm. So this is that scenario that Carson's trying to warn against, that you sort of slowly move and somebody picks him up, but you have to trust God. So this is about this weight thing.
Yeah.
Well,
which is really hard for a committee that has no candidates coming in, except for this one that just got hired by somebody else.
Yeah. Yeah.
So with that is, I think we need to collapse the greens as quick as we can. You know, I don't see there's any reason to wait. And I think even for references, I think, you know, hey, bring them on and we'll check references, but I would say, you know, don't drag our feet. And if there's somebody we think worth talking to, let's talk with them.
Mm-hmm. There, I would like to recommend that there's a deliberate point in the sequence where we're telling them about our body.
There is one.
To help them feel the match and not wait until the in-person.
Yeah, I think we do that right before the phone interview. We send them information about the body and so that they're prepared for the phone interview.
And I think on that point, though, is I don't know, and again, I don't know how you deal with this, but it's almost, we're looking for a senior minister. We should wait for him to ask for this. And if he doesn't ask for that, to me, that's a sign. It's like, that guy should be, that should be like number two on his list, is, hey, tell me about your church, about your people. And
so, on that phone call, that you would expect him to
that
ask
he should at be least leading a question.
And
that.
They've already done research online with what our church is all about, probably.
There was a time when I had multiple people reporting to me, and I had the luxury when I was interviewing a new candidate to have them sit down with two people that reported to me, and I left the room, and I said, this is a confidential conversation. Mm-hmm. Ask them anything you want about what it's like working for me and working for this company. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I would get general feedback from those employees, I like this person, I don't, but they wouldn't tell me what they asked and all, but it was just a free, it helped them get to know that person better, and they got to ask whatever it's really like. Mm-hmm. And so some version of that, or if there's a, as opposed to just an elder saying what it's like to be here, you know, I don't know what that looks like
I think having, you know, the congregation, several people in the congregation involved in person would be helpful, you know. Some people that are, I don't know who those people are, but we got to maybe identify them.
And that's a Jeremiah and Nathan kind of scenario, too. Mm-hmm. Like if we send them out to dinner or something together, one of those scenarios where they could talk about that.
Yeah, I'm thinking about like maybe, you know, the Ferguson's, you know, involving Gary and Brett maybe at some point, because the person that's coming into senior, he should also know what the congregants are like, you know, and the staff and elders, give him an opportunity to have some insight into the congregants so that he's clear on what he's walking into, right? So I think thinking through how we get them involved, to your point, Dave, when you're talking about the 360, I think that would be helpful to have at some point when we do in person, to have, mm-hmm. you know, those people involved as well.
I might be afraid to interview with Carrie, though.
Yeah.
She interviews way too many people.
Yeah.
And just again, sitting with her. it's hard in my mind, you know, there's certain things we have to do, but, you know, we've got two people, and I want to make sure that I get some time with this guy, mm-hmm. and as the elders, I hope we all get time with this guy. And then, okay, then we might, if there's time left, yeah, let's bring in some other people. But I don't want the situation to be, we've hired somebody and said, Brett, why did you hire him? It's like, well, I didn't, you know, I didn't have a chance to ask him any questions. So they asked him these questions, but mm-hmm. those are none of the questions I would have asked him, mm-hmm. those kinds of a thing. And I just want to make sure that
okay.
everybody at this table has an opportunity to ask a question if they want to and get a feel for this guy. And, you know, not to say that other people in the congregation shouldn't have, but I just want to make sure that all of us do.
There's no real reason that we have to limit it to two on the Zoom, is there? I mean,
no,
yeah.
No.
I mean, I wouldn't want to overwhelm them, but I mean, even if it was four, you know.
Yeah,
you know,
that's right. True.
I think it would be acceptable to the interviewee.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the time on a Zoom is a bit hard. So I know Jeremiah's a million years long, and Steve and I had the conversation about it. And then we failed, I think, the first interview that we did for the youth minister, and we had him on there for an hour. Okay. So that's the thing, that it's the Zoom interviews are very, they need to be very concise. So if we have these 10 questions, we don't tell him the 10 questions ahead of time, but we are very much that he needs to give us concise answers really quick.
Mm-hmm. So I really like the long format for those interviews, because what you get is you get them telling stories and like them like going on about themselves or about some experience they had. That's how I get to know their personality, not just with whatever candy they came up with for it. But yeah, maybe not have a huge list of questions that you have to go through, you know. Maybe it, whatever, you know, you have a time limit. At a certain point, you say, okay, well, we didn't make it to those, but let's.
Okay.
That's what sold me on Jeremiah, was hearing him talk and tell stories about the churches he's been and what he'd been doing.
I could only make it to the first 10 minutes.
Every second.
Yeah.
First 10 minutes, and then. But you were on the Zoom with them, weren't you?
I was.
That's why you could do it.
I rewatched the whole thing, though, in retrospect. So.
Different personality.
I will say, if we can talk about Mr. Santiago specifically, just from reading through the resume and the things, mm-hmm. that he might be really solid. It's really hard for me to envision hiring someone the same age as Nathan and Jeremiah.
Yeah,
So
we talked about that.
I don't
want to
kill this one, you know, already. But that's quite the hurdle.
It is. It's absolutely.
He's probably worth a phone interview still. But
it is.
You know,
I've thought the same thing. And I'm thinking, okay, let the Spirit lead. Let the Spirit lead. I'm really trying to do that, because I thought the same thing. Like, boy, thinking of three guys in their 20s. And then I thought, well, maybe Jeff, we could hire him part-time just to kind of for 6 months or 12 months to kind of be there mentoring him. And so.
Pastor Emeritus.
I think to a degree, when the three of us met Dave yesterday, I think our inclination was to try to not kill it. Mm-hmm. Even if it didn't maybe check every box, thinking that maybe it would dawn on us how this was going to work as the relationship evolved, if we felt like it was a person that we really could build on. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And because it is a little hard to imagine somebody and again, this is not about, you know, just in terms of staff leadership, when you also throw that in, and then ministry development, and then the history and idiosyncrasies of our congregation, just all those dynamics, because we're not even, like I was with somebody today, and they said, but we're not really a church of, you know, I'm scared to death about this process, because I'm afraid we're going to hire somebody that really kind of fits most churches of Christ, and that's not who we are. You know what I mean? So there's a lot of nuance to this that we are not going to know until we get in there and then say, well, okay, we're still 35% short on the job description. Now what do we do? Does that mean this person is not the right person, or does that mean we rethink this and have a part-time, or we get some mentoring, or we divvy it up differently? And I think we're at this point, we're thinking if they are a quality person with a passion and the capabilities of growing into this, then we would try not to discount it from the beginning.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think also that, so like when we were doing the youth ministers, is I feel there's also an obligation, if somebody is actively pursuing ministry, that we need to encourage them. And if there's a chance, but part of the interview was like, listen, if you're called to do this, we want to pray for you.
Yeah.
Maybe it's not here.
Right.
But, but talking with Saber, there are not many people like you. And so I think part of what we need to do is make sure that we're encouraging these people and saying, yeah, we're praying for you. If the fit's not here, you know, understand that, you know, keep doing what you're doing. And so I do think that's also part of what we need to do. So if somebody's starting off, and we don't want to encourage them and, you know, let them know what it's like to work with people.
Just another quick question. What congregation does Bernie Baggett attend?
O'Fallon.
He was telling me at McLaughlin's funeral that they've been looking for a long time.
Yeah.
And so I just mentioned that because if we have a phone interview and he's not going to go forward here,
looking for a pulpit guy, or
yeah.
Oh, Shane's not going to.
Is Shane not there?
He said he's been filling in, but I don't think he's the permanent guy. I didn't even know where he went.
This is O'Fallon?
O'Fallon, yeah. I thought he was full time, and then he wanted to go more part time and do his job. Okay. And forever they've been looking for an associate / youth minister.
Okay, maybe I just misunderstood him.
They could have changed it and talked to him in a few months.
Well, that still might be a good thing for this guy, too, because if he's youth minister now and it's something that's youth minister / preacher.
I thought about
those kind of, you know, move him on and pray for him and, you know.
Yeah.
Best job I ever got was when I interviewed with this guy.
Yeah.
He never gave me the job, but he sent me to a guy. He said, I think you're a good fit for my buddy.
Oh, yeah.
That's been awesome.
Yeah.
So one of the things about it, I think, Brett, what you were saying about that is a lot of the ministries that we've filled in the last 10 years have started out as one job and it never got filled, but we filled it by two or by, like, you're sort of like you're saying, this taking Jeff for 6 months or whatever, because we did that with McKaylee, and we did that with and Heather came on at the same time, and then now we did it sort of differently and pulled on Kaylin. So it's those kinds of things that are, we may only find a pulpit minister, not a senior minister, because we're sort of looking for a senior minister. That's sort of what but if we find only 27-year-olds, that's not really senior by any means, because they've never really held even a pulpit ministry job, let alone.
Yeah.
So it may be that we try to have that as option two in the back of our minds, that we're not necessarily.
What I was saying in a different way.
So,
I think another type of candidate that we can be open to, hopefully, is a candidate that he's maybe did his MDiv, and he wants to go do his PhD, but he's not quite ready to do that yet. And we might have a 3 to 5 year window with him. And being open to that, you know, if he's an ideal candidate that can really help us address some things that we see on the horizon, and just take that short window, and then theoretically, if that's the case, when he leaves in 3 to 5 years, we're better positioned than we would have been, right? So I think being open to that type of candidate, you know, because it's easy to look for that candidate that's going to be long term, but a better fit for us at the time, maybe somebody that's not going to be long term, right? We just may have to go through this process again in another 3 to 5 years.
Yeah, but I was hoping to retire as an elder before then. Yeah.
You know, but theoretically, would be a healthier church, maybe even more attractive church, you know, to the next candidate coming in. You know, so. So I'm just, you know, want us to put that out there that we be open to that type of scenario as well.
All that is being open to the Spirit.
Yes.
Amen.
Yes. Yes.
Let me ask you a question on a different, little bit different. Is there anybody you know within your network that you would like us to call out of their particular position to come here? In other words, based on a conviction that this is the right place, mm-hmm. it's turning the question around. They are not looking.
Mm-hmm. Those are the best.
We are looking.
Yeah.
And we feel like they would fit approach. What we're looking.
Yeah. Debbie punched me in the side. Debbie punched me in the side Saturday morning and says, who is that guy? It was Kyle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Kyle. Oh, I really like Kyle.
Yeah.
That's kind of, that'd be a little bit a tough one.
And that's exactly how they got him. Because he was somebody in their congregation, I think is what he was telling me.
No, he was at top of his class at Harding, and he came up as a...
youth ministry intern.
Youth ministry intern.
That's what, so he wasn't
and
even there.
But they right away saw the potential long term of this, and so said, stick around, mm-hmm. and then he did his MDiv, and it was pretty good planning for Lafayette's approach to things. Worked with young adults, and now he's the guy. Okay.
Well, that's how Mid-County got me. Okay. I was not interested, and I said no. And then about 2 weeks later, Ben Williams came and said, I wish you'd really think about it. I'm going to pray and fast. And I had never had anybody miss food for my sake.
Miss food for your sake?
Yeah. And so I was like, whoa, I went home and told Susan, like, okay, I guess we need to think about this.
So were you full-time at Maryland Heights?
Yes, at that point I was, yes.
And they recruited you from Maryland Heights?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What did Merle Heist think of that?
Never forgiven us.
Dave Bearden was really good. He really saw that my future there, trying to do youth and family, mm-hmm. was not getting anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And he encouraged me to really consider it.
Okay. Oh,
that's good. Yeah. He encouraged you to do that.
Okay.
Yeah. And one person did come to mind for me and my question, a little bit leading. But, for instance, I've heard that there's some things going on at OC, Oklahoma Christian. I don't know whether he's happy or not, but I just wondered what you would think if somebody like Alden Bass and Candace were available. Now, he's never done a pulpit ministry job, but, I mean, the guy is obviously excellently schooled, but is of any couple I've ever met, talk about living their faith. Mm-hmm. I mean, they live down in a communal life in the city for years and years. He rides his bicycle to SLU all the way through North City into, you know, I mean, that was just a really committed lifestyle to be a disciple of Jesus. Mm-hmm. And again, he's a professor there and he may want to stay a professor, but I'm saying, would he, if is there somebody like that that would strike a lot of the notes, who would have enough seasoning, has enough connection, even history, and that's his case, with us, that we would know what we were getting and he would know what he was getting into.
Yeah.
That wouldn't be surprising. Yeah. Him and I had a lot of conversations together when he was here.
When Steve mentioned Mason Lee, one of the younger guys, I said, I'm not asking Carson about that one. No way.
Yeah, he's their up-and-coming star at ACU in terms of the preaching professor, so that would be...
Alden is an impressive guy in lots of ways. I hadn't thought of him, but I wouldn't veto that consideration or let's pray about that. Mm-hmm. I thought about Nate Reiser. I don't know what he's really doing other than the Neotes,
mm-hmm. right.
caretaker.
Yeah,
but
he's teaching at Hillsborough, I think.
Is that right?
No, he's coaching there. Yeah. And he was working with the couple that used to go here. They had the cushion business, but their business went down. So now he's has a friend who has him going all over the country, flying there, getting a vehicle and driving it to another place.
Oh,
he's making real good money doing that.
Oh, is he teaching at?
Oh, and he's also teaching at ACU.
At ACU,
an adjunct teacher there, and he's working on his PhD.
So, he's coaching it too.
So he's coaching soccer.
Okay.
And then
we should have started the other. What is he not doing?
He's not preaching here yet.
Is it car cushions or like tractor cushions?
They were designer cushions.
One of our brothers decks out tractors, and his family business was married into, and really good business.
Decks out tractors.
Who would have thought?
Those farmers, they wouldn't be comfortable. They'd be sitting there all the time.
No kidding. But anyway, so
is that a yes on Alden? Do we want
to? I don't know. Just a thought. I mean, I would be happy to talk to him if I don't want to jump ahead of ourselves here, and I didn't think of it till I was just sitting here. Mm-hmm. But I did hear that, you know, a while back that maybe he wasn't as happy as this is third hand. I wouldn't want to go directly. But that when he first got there, he was pretty gung ho about some things. But then
they changed their president. I know, talked to Dudley, and pretty conservative.
Right, yeah. They've kind of taken a swerve back to the right. And kind of Lipscomb did the same thing, and maybe they needed to. Who knows? I don't know anything about church, school politics, and all that. But mm-hmm. there's a lot going on.
Yeah. Well, I was afraid those Lipscomb kids. Yeah. They were. Oh, I don't know.
Watch it.
They had instruments. I don't know.
What about Nate? Should we reach out to him too?
I think it'd be good for us to pray about these kind of things,
mm-hmm.
and maybe try to bring to the next meeting.
Okay.
Let's flesh out that list. Mm-hmm. See what, I don't know.
Okay. Yeah.
You know,
that's a good call.
As opposed to impulse.
I like your idea about trying to find somebody that's really good and not looking at that work.
Yeah.
I remember when my daughter was married, living in Abilene, and we went down there for the baby dedication, and it was at Highland, and you know, Mike Cope was preaching there, and he was a pretty young guy at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, that guy's really going somewhere. You could just tell. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, people who are professors and so on, you know, if they don't have that call to preach, I don't know. That concerns me.
Well, you mentioned Mike Cope. That's what I told, I think, these guys, that with Michael Santiago being young, I said, and I wonder if maybe he's the next Mike Hope.
I think when, you know, Max Lucado was running around down here.
Yeah.
Truthfully, he didn't impress me.
He's a good writer.
I think, again, God will send us who we need, and we just need to pray about it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, Dave. So we'll take up your recommendation to some praying. Brad's recommendation to some praying. Those two candidates and others, and see what at least is. Maybe next meeting we'll process kind of our thoughts on that. Two more things. I'm going to pray for Dave as. Before we leave today, Dave, if you give us to do that. And we wanted to also bring maybe Todd Mayberry before the group as a potential person that can sit in here with us. Anyway, I just want to put it out there, see what you guys think about Todd as a person that can sit in here with us.
Todd has such a heart for God and service and the poor. The needy is something I've always been impressed with him, and things that he and Beth both do is very, very impressive. His conviction about the homosexuals is one that we have to, you know, he's feels pretty strong, I believe. Just about that.
What is the conviction about?
Is that they're that homosexuality is okay?
Oh, it's not a sin.
Yeah, I guess.
I've not really heard him say it that way, but I think that would be probably a fair representation.
Probably, he's got a real compassion for that.
He's more pro than
anti.
Yeah, and I in my mind, I look at homosexuality and I look at the LGBTQT as two different things. So I don't know what he's with the whole gamut of things, and so I think we'd have to decide: are we willing to have the diversity in thought in that area here? If we're not, I think it would come back and bite us and him.
Okay.
But I just, he's got a great heart.
That was the one reservation I had, was that is, you know, we even started wrestling with that issue, and you know, you don't want to have all like-minded people, you don't want to load the bench, but mm-hmm. I think you just need to be aware of, you know, are we ready to go down that road? And I don't know that I am, so.
Mm-hmm. And yet, maybe we should let him speak for himself as opposed to us speak for him
mm-hmm.
on that, if he would even. And I mean, I feel such a kinship with Todd in so many ways. And I mean, him and I, we just met for years reading books together, and Rob was a part of that, you know, and for a while Jason Lacoste as well, for a while Jeff Fogarty, but, you know, just reading theology, and I mean, it just shaped a lot of my thought and thinking, and Todd's too, and it's just, I just see so much good in that guy.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Again, the kind of the principle being the diversity is a good thing, if we can mm-hmm. believe that and believe one of our own values, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
Then I do. I, not to say that we shouldn't explore this in relation to his views there, but I think I'd like to hear that from him. I think he's always felt a little bit out as an outsider mm-hmm. because he lives in the city and has such a little different kind of viewpoint on things, and because he's an idealist, and there's just we're. Between those two things, maybe he's always just felt a little depressed about the church, for lack of a better word, which I think we can all identify with because of the consumerism and the you know, the way the culture has just invaded our lives and our church life and all that. But getting past all that, I mean, the influence he's had and has on Torah, on Bryant, on Michael Cannon. I know it's been a village, but he has done a good job of being being the father for that those group,
right.
And then also not being overbearing in such a way that, you know, all of us have been involved in their lives because he's just made it available. So I mean, I don't know, that's pretty good discipleship right there. Yeah. Pretty good leadership.
Yeah,
pretty good shepherding.
Pretty good shepherding.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and to commit his lifestyle to moving his entire family into a place where neither one of us would want to even go visit, mm-hmm. right?
That's, you mean the North City?
Yeah. So I think, you know, that, and he did that because he was committed to God's work, mm-hmm. right? You know, he was committed to God's
right.
work. And so I think that I don't really know his position on LGBTQ, so I can't speak to that, but if he has a different position, that doesn't necessarily mean that we're going to be swayed in that direction. Because
yeah.
I think if Brad had his way, we'd have a woman preaching right now.
Uh-huh.
So Brad has a different position on, you know, I don't want to put words in your mouth, Brad, but I think you'd be okay with that.
Yeah.
When I heard you say that we had a woman preaching. So I don't want to put words on, am I correct in saying that?
Yes.
And so, but I think...
But I think there's a difference between that and, you know, somebody saying that homosexuality is acceptable to God. The word just, you know.
He calls into question what the foundation for
right.
how he views the Bible, or what's the basis for his beliefs and understanding.
So as he said that, I haven't had that conversation, so I can't speak to that. So.
And then can we, or would we be okay with somebody who has that conviction? No, and coming into a group that knowing that as a church we have a different conviction.
Okay.
Would that go together?
I hear what you're saying. I mean, I haven't heard his convictions
along those lines. So I don't really, I'm not as familiar with that. So as he stated that, clearly, I don't.
I don't.
You know, okay. I don't know what his position is on it.
Don might have no. I mean, Don meets with him every week too. No.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah, I'm kind of like you. I don't really want to speak for him, but I'm fairly confident that he would take a position that he feels like that is an acceptable
lifestyle
choice.
Lifestyle.
I'd be interested to hear the case made for that. Mm-hmm. I've not heard a good one made.
And he would give you one. I mean,
yeah, he would. Definitely. He's thought it through.
I mean, and his daughter has a lifestyle like right. that, and is estranged. I mean, from the family, it's. I mean, I have the utmost respect for Todd and Beth.
Well,
I mean,
but she's isn't Ray. I forget the term, but she's asexual.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, that's different.
Yeah.
That's what she is now. I think that she was different before.
Yeah.
Like after she came out of college, I thought she was
being abstinent.
I don't remember what she called herself at that point.
Yeah.
But I think where she's at now is this asexual, which is now lots of people use.
Yeah.
But just so you know, the Missouri legislature's got 9 bills that are going to be, coming up, and the bills are saying that, they're going to have kids that are basically using their birth certificates as to which sex they're going to be. And, the LGBT community is up in arms, and there's going to be all kinds of money funneled in here, and they're trying to get stuff put on the Constitution, and we're going to be told that we're having hate speech when we say that homosexuality is a sin. And it's gonna blow, guys. I mean, I can't see how a person can hold that view, that it's okay, and that's a non-starter for me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, maybe it's simpler than that. Maybe he feels a calling in his heart, but doesn't have a way to explain it.
Well, I've had a lot of clients, and I mean, I've got clients who are, gay and work with them. Because your child just makes decisions and suddenly they've changed their mind. And that's kind of what I see is not, based on a biblical concept of, what God wants and who He is and what He calls for.
Probably not a good candidate right now. So. So let's just table it, maybe. All right. Good discussion, though. Good to get that out there. So,
Before we pray for me, I did want to mention, and I'll be very brief, but I don't know if you saw in the bulletin, the December contributions to this body were robust. And so when we put the budget together, it was break even. And I was saying it's going to take a 7.5% increase from our previous year actual. Well, in reality, that break-even budget, it just requires a flat. The very same amount we got this last year, $699, we need $700,000.
Oh, wow. God.
And we have a break-even budget.
Wow. Thank
so that's what amazing. I'm going to be presenting is that. But I'm still trying to figure out how to do that to not come across as, hey, our giving's okay.
Yeah.
I mean, some people really stepped up in November and December, and we're 90,000 short of our budget and 50-some grand positive on the bottom line.
You got a crazy challenge.
Yeah, you sure do.
But Dave, I almost wonder, and I appreciate all the work you've done with the budget, but just hearing that, do we want to go out with a flat budget? Is that actually what I understand? That covers costs, but it doesn't. We
aim our sights a little higher.
It just seems like there should be some even challenge. If it's only 3%.
Okay.
A couple of years ago we had the bottom line little line there where we had the money to go back to the capital. Fund, yes. Even if you put 3% in that with your budget, I would almost feel better about it than to say flat.
Okay.
It just feels a little, I mean, I know you didn't
you had no idea this would happen this way, but it has a bit of a sense of everything's fine. We're going to rock along the mediocrity for another year.
Yeah, I want
to. And well, maybe it's to make up for the $50,000 that we're giving to the Marseille, just to fill in with the for the building fund or whatever that is. I don't know.
He's an accountant. He doesn't do fuzzy logic.
Yeah. No, I'm a fuzzy guy.
That sounds so good, Steve.
I'm to say robust, man. That's impressive.
Yeah. Does 3%, does that resonate with you guys? He makes a good point. What do you guys think? Do you want to massage that a little, or does that sound good?
I think that's fine. I still think, Dave, and I keep harping on this, but I think they need to see how our actual giving has changed over the past 5 years.
Yeah,
and I've got the last three.
Okay,
I'm having trouble going back further and finding those numbers, but I'm trying, and that's slide number one.
Okay,
right there.
Okay, because I think they need to know. Yes, we've hit budget, but we have reduced the amount we spent.
Yeah,
you know, it's not that we've, because I remember 1 year we were at $800,000.
Yeah,
and we're at $600,000 now.
Yeah,
yeah. Yep.
Right. And I think those are
six good, or seven.
2020.
Right. So I think those are
seven.
Good.
Yeah, we're at seven.
700 now. Yeah. 699.
And, and did it ever get to nine?
Yeah. Our budget was 902 5 years ago,
2019. That's when it was at its.
But I wouldn't. For the prior years, I wouldn't even mention budget. I think that just confuses.
Correct.
I think that this is our actual giving. What we
gave. Actual. Every year,
and we never got to budget. Since COVID, we have never hit budget. Before COVID, we hit budget. You know?
Right.
You
don't get it. And I agree with that, because in my head, you know, most of the 99% of the people are going to see numbers. They're not going to understand it, and they're going to say, they're going to come away with a couple things. One is, we're fiscally responsible. Okay, these guys are taking care of things. Yeah. This is great. Somebody knows what's going on. I didn't understand what was said, but I appreciate that somebody knows what's going on. And the other is what Don is saying is, a budget is our what we represent as being important. And so being under budget means there's missions that we thought are important that we're not doing. And so, yeah, we got a balanced budget, but that means we're not doing things. And showing the cash is, we are fiscally responsible with this, but just think what we could be doing for God's kingdom if, you know, our giving increased. And I think, you know, that's kind of the point we want to make. Because, I think the numbers are good, but most people are just going to say, thanks, Dave, for keeping that square for us, so I don't have to think about that.
Well, there's $200,000 that we had before that we don't have now that we could be spending now. Well, what do we do with that $200,000 this year if we really actually had it again?
And now, we lost some people. Did we lose big givers?
We did. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that's part of it.
I mean, that's a good part of it.
Yeah.
Just wanted to...
Not whatever you do will be incredible. We'll be praying for you. Yes, every year you always do an incredible job.
Dave, I don't know how you do this on top of it, but I do think we need to call out of the really two really big projects, that the parking lot, and I mean, I know it's capital and this, but just kind of confuses people in terms of, well,
Where'd that come from?
Yeah, yeah. But the parking lot and the front of the auditorium, man, that was some really amazing work this year.
Yeah.
You know, and that should be, we should get the get that said and Brett credited for pushing that stuff through like a maniac man. So that was awesome. Yeah. And then you're going to talk about Marseille
as a part of it.
So that's another part of a leg of the story.
Right. We've pledged $100,000 to them, and we'll offer 50 now as the purchase. And do they want the other 50 now to help with the purchase or part of the rebuild?
Amazing.
And that's,
that's
our conviction.
I'm really proud of us doing that.
Yeah. And invite them to prayerfully consider their individual contributions, send it in to the office, and we're collecting for that, ideally within the next month. February, think in terms of February, because that would...
There's a box sitting out back. Go just drop your check in today.
Yeah. Yeah. So have you all told Craig?
No.
Okay.
No. I thought I'd let the congregation know, and then we'd talk. I think Elizabeth does a monthly upload of whatever's come in, and we'll communicate our pledge
and do that that way. So
it seemed like the missions committee, because he talked with you guys, just to kind of communicating to them would be
good. Yeah, as soon as Dave says we can send it, we can send it.
Yeah.
And Dave's on the committee too.
Oh, so yeah. Right. Okay.
Good stuff, guys. That's real good. And Dave, thanks for doing that.
Yeah.
So had the pre-surgery appointment today. So I got all of my marching orders on the stuff I got to do before Tuesday and not do before Tuesday. Okay. And then I did put in the congregational prayer request that I'm having surgery for a heart valve repair. So that was in yesterday's bulletin. Okay. And so there's a few people just freaking out a little bit about that. First they heard of it, and I've had 2 months to wrap my mind around this is going to happen. And that's been a blessing, and I got to realize, okay, so people are coming over to pray on Sunday
Suzanne
night.
Kelby,
yeah.
Suzanne Kelby.
Okay. Yeah, and things like that. Yeah. And so people are, you know,
making them wear,
and I just have to
mask. Yeah, mask at your house. Good.
Yeah. So, well, I'll mask up because protect me, but anyway, that's been a blessing that that's lining up, and lots of folks at work are admitting they're prayerful people and wanting to pray for me. Gosh, that's a pretty cool thing, because we tend to not go there, and so that's a good things. Good. So, thankful for that.
Don, would you mind leading the prayer?
Not at all.
I guess we can surround them, but should we touch you?
Sick ones at home.
We'll lay hands on the face. Yeah. Laying hands, I don't know if those things are possible, but yeah.
That's good. Thank you, guys.
Lord God, we are here in your presence and just thankful for you hearing our prayer.
That's
and
right.
We lift up our brother Dave right now that you will just rain just blessings on him and Amy over these next few days, and particularly with Dave, to give him the strength to endure the surgery, the doctors, the skills that they've been blessed with. We pray for their sharpest attention, that you will give them great abilities to make that repair, I think will be the choice that David would like, and just pray that they'll be able to do that, and that he'll be able to recover quickly and just be strong and be complete success. And we know, Father, you love us and that you care for us and that you hold us in your hand. And we just pray an extra squeeze for Dave and Amy this week, and just pray for just a continued blessing over this entire time as they experience the surgery, but also in the recovery and the time that that will take. And help us to be good about that and not calling on Dave and too much, and letting him heal, and just be ready to serve in any way that we can there. Again, Father, we love you, and we are so grateful that you love us. Yes. And we just want to bask in that and just pray again that you will help us and lead us in the right direction. We're grateful for Jesus, and it's in his name that we pray tonight. Amen.
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 Thank you, guys. And I will say an unexpected blessing has been Arsteen Dickerson.
She's ready to rehab you, probably.
She had an aorta valve repaired, aortic valve, just a year ago. She's been very encouraging to just talk about what that was genuinely like. And, you know, comforting, sobering at the same time. Yeah, but that's just good. That's just really helpful. It's been a blessing.